It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. Ooh, we have a lot to talk about. It's official. Windows 11 22H2 coming soon to a computer near you if it hasn't already. We'll talk about the ins, the outs, the pros, the cons. There's a whole bunch to talk about. The Windows 10 version coming in October. We have a Surface event. The official date has been announced. And Intel says bye-bye Pentium, bye-bye Celeron. All of that next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 795, recorded Wednesday, September 21st, 2022. No at thankyou.com. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by New Relic. Use the data platform made for the curious. Right now, you can get access to the whole New Relic platform and 100 gigabytes of data per month, free, forever. No credit card required. Sign up at newrelic.com/windows. And by SecureWorks. Are you ready for inevitable cyber threats? SecureWorks detects evolving adversaries and defends against them with a combination of security analytics and threat intelligence direct from their own counter-threat unit. Visit SecureWorks.com/twit to get a free trial of Taegis Extended Detection and Response. You may know it as XDR. And by Melissa. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Try Melissa's API in the developer portal. It's easy to log on, sign up, and start playing in the API sandbox 24/7. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft with Paulie Thurrott.
Hello.
From TheVerat.com. That's good. I like, hello. And Mary Jo Foley from ZDNet. Hello, Mary Jo.
Hello.
Good to see you both. I feel like I haven't been here in a long time.
That's because yesterday lasted a frickin' eternity, Leo.
Yeah, it did.
it was a long day.
It was a long day.
Were you igniting or something? What were you doing?
No, we were 22H2ing.
It's here.
It is here.
It's here.
Boys and girls.
After a lot of talk.
It's
sort of here.
It's finally, yeah.
Well, it's the mostly here. 22-ing of-ing.
It's the, I don't know.
Yay.
No, I said sort of because, as you're going to discuss, it's not here for everyone.
So I am using Windows 11. Yeah. So what should I do? Tell me, sir.
Oh, Axel, this is great. So go to Windows Update.
Okay.
Check for updates. This is actually a good test.
You
got to
be a seeker. Be careful.
Oh, you know, the bad thing is that when I type update now, it goes to Dell update. I have to type Windows update, which is very annoying. It says I'm up to date. Gosh, I wish I could show this, but something went wrong with my HDMI dongle.
Something suddenly went wrong.
Something suddenly went wrong. Let me plug it in again.
Check again. Screen.
Okay, check. Last checked at 3:35 a.m., so maybe something's happened between now.
Oh, something's definitely happened. The problem's going to be you probably have other updates, and those might take a little while, but that's okay. We can get those going.
I did my updates yesterday, and I didn't have any because Patch Tuesday. Security intelligence update for Defender. Well, I got that yesterday, too. Nothing
else.
I
get that every day.
Do I have to? But see, I'm not in the Insider program.
Doesn't matter.
You don't want to be. This is the mainstream.
Well, hold on a sec. Wait. This is a Dell XPS you have, right?
Yeah, XPS 15.
I thought you already upgraded this.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Hit the start button and type WinVer, W-I-N-V-E-R.
Oh, I just go to the Windows system. I am in Windows 11 Home 22H2. Installed June 8th. 22621.521.
512. Okay, 521. Yeah, there you go. So that's
got
it. Build number. Yeah, you have it.
So
that...
Was this because I used to be in the Insider program?
Yeah, I told you to do that thing where you
the release.
So, I thought so, yeah.
I suspected.
this is something I was going to share a little later, but I will say this build is over 2 months old. It's the thing that I based the book that I'm writing on, knowing it would be the final build. I had no qualms about that whatsoever. There's been a lot of nonsense between then and now, and there's some more nonsense. We'll get to it.
That's good news. That means it is a well baked update.
I don't know if I'd
it's
go
a
that
better
far.
Baked update than the first one.
Okay.
I'm going to try really hard not to be super cynical today because there's some good stuff in here.
Paul's been looking at the Twitters again, I think.
I think so.
So
there's enough cynicism in the world is all I'm saying.
Let me just to clarify this. When I got this machine, it came with Windows 11, I believe. That's and right. You suggested that I enter the Insider program in the release preview.
In your usual version of the truth, what I said was it would be safe to go to 22H if you wanted to.
Okay.
But that would be your decision, and I didn't want you to come back later and blame me.
And it was irrevocable. Yes?
Yeah.
Sort of?
Yes. But the idea is you do that, and then you unenroll from the Insider program.
Which I must have done. Because I think I'm in the normal.
Which you must have done.
Yeah.
You can go look to see if you want to make
sure. Okay, let me just make sure. Because I kind of want to stay at this place. So I'll go to the Advanced Windows Update Options. Receive.
No, go to. No, sorry.
I'm wrong. No, okay.
There's an option below that called
Windows Insider. Program. The one with a little. Looks like diamonds. Oh, I am release preview. So I should undo that. Yes.
Yeah, there should be an option. Mine is out now. So, but there will be an option that says unenroll.
It says queued for unenrollment. Stop getting. I'm already queued for unenrollment.
Then you're all set. Mm-hmm.
Must have done that before.
You did it before. We must have done it when we talked about this back.
So I turned it on. Got it. I think that's what happened. Is I got 11. Mm-hmm. We could go back and listen to the tapes, but I believe I got 11H2.
We should, because I think we'd find that what I said was.
You said what could possibly go wrong, and I believed you. And then I unenrolled. It's still not unenrolled, but no, I tried
right.
the window.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is a question. When is this going to happen?
Right.
It should happen. You know, you would have thought it would have happened, but it will happen.
The magic window.
There is a button below it, which I will not press. It says unenroll this device immediately. And then in the fine print, to stop getting Insider Preview builds on this device, you'll need to clean install the latest release of Windows. Option will erase all your data.
You're okay. You're on the path.
I'm cute.
Stay where you are.
Cute.
Stay where you are.
Stop. Don't move.
You are okay.
Don't move.
I have the Nye release, the knee release.
That's right. Yep.
Okay. So that's good. I'm going to stick with that.
Mary Jo can explain that if you're curious what that means.
Is it short for nightly?
Nickel. It's short for a precious metal.
Nickel.
Remember the periodic table
N-I.
Of elements,
N-I.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. So good. So this is where everybody who's listening should be, if you're on Windows 11, you would want to do this. That's the question.
Yeah, right. I think so. There's no reason not to.
I've been on it since
June.
There's
no reason not to.
It seems fine.
You may not get it. That's what we should be very clear about.
Well, yeah, there are ways to force it, of course, like there are with all things.
Right.
You know, listen, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably already on it.
Yeah.
There's nothing stopping. We'll talk about some of the ways you can do it. I will discuss later one of the interesting blockers I ran into on a particular computer when I tried to force install the update just to see how it worked, and it's humorous how it starts to stop. But it's a typical Microsoft release these days. You know, it's a lot of uncertainty and not exactly the results we were promised. But we'll get into that in a moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but this is official. This is now official. 22H2.
That's right.
Right.
Is the official version. And as with all of these...
the clock started ticking yesterday, the support clock.
The support life cycle, that's right.
And it's a staged rollout, so everybody doesn't get it at once, but we'll...
Right.
Yes, it is.
Good.
That's right.
Yeah. So nice. I would say that if you want to talk about the most confusing thing about this rollout...
I'm curious if there's just one.
And there are a few. Okay. There is going to be a... follow-on rollout to this coming first in test in October. Like if you are someone who gets those patches on those off weeks, like CD weeks, you'll be able to check this out in October, or wait until Patch Tuesday in November, and you will get this other bundle of features that will include the infamous tabbed File Explorer and a few other random things.
Yeah.
Microsoft considers this part of Windows 11 22H2. So it's almost like a two-part rollout. Like yesterday was part one. Part two is in November. At part two, it's going to be considered part of the original rollout, even though it's coming a month or two later. So, which is
there are two
confusing.
Obvious questions to that statement. I know the answers, so I'll pose these as hypotheticals. Actually, I don't know the answer to the first one. If that's the case, why not just wait till October to release the whole damn thing?
Yeah, you know, I don't know why.
Why would you do 90-something percent? Okay, that's the unknowable one. But the other one is a more interesting topic, which is that, we're getting out of order here.
But
so there's another story around this. We'll get to that. I guess the important thing for people listening to this, who are individuals who are going to install this on their computer, is what she just said. Starting today, you may get this. If you want to force it, you can. But if you want, if you want the whole thing, you might have to wait till October or November. It would be October for you folks, where you can go install this. I guess will be a preview update.
Yep.
Maybe they call it. And you'll get, like she said, File Explorer tabs and some other stuff, which we'll get to. Why? You know, this was an interesting little rollout for us because we got some on the record commentary from Microsoft, and there was a lot of no comments in there. So we asked very specific questions and they gave very specific answers. I don't know why they did this
on
the
record.
But it was
great they talked to us. It was great they talked to us.
They will never do it again. Mark my words. This is the end of that. This is the end. No, I don't know why they did this. It was a mistake.
Yeah.
Maybe. Because we asked, the questions that needed to be asked, and they were not answered well. Simple questions like, what's the build number? You've known the build number since July. Why can't you just tell? We know the build number. We're just doing this to get it on the record. But no, they wouldn't tell us that. They'd never explain why, some now, some later.
Right.
I don't know.
So the build number, all they'll say when you say, what is the build number of 22H2? They'll say it's 22621, which we knew since, like Paul said, since the summer. But then some people who are downloading it are getting 22621.521. Some people are getting 22621.382, right? Yeah. Like people are getting different. There's a third
build
one.
Number, and that is, I got to bring up my notes. It is.
Which is very
105.
Odd.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So.
Yeah. And they said to me. No, here's what they said to me when I said, so why are there these different build numbers? Like, it seems like it should be one thing. They said the final build number is subject to change as we work to finalize the global rollout starting September 20th.
Today, tomorrow, yesterday.
But you guys still must know what this is RTM, right? This is the RTM build. Like, what is it?
Does this matter to anybody? It's just so you can write about it, right? Or...
Well, it does. Here's where it matters. And I have a theory that I'll relay later in the show about why they're doing this in this way. We know that they've been doing A/B testing, so to speak, in the beta channel of the Insider program. We know that on one side, people are getting new features. Some people aren't. We know how businesses are going to be serviced going forward. I think this stuff is all tied to the fact that for people like us, we like to say Windows version whatever is build number whatever, period, full stop. That's the end of the conversation. Yep. Unfortunately, with Windows 11, things have gotten very squishy. There are multiple build numbers. But the people who would need to know the difference between whether you have 22H2 with or without, say, File Explorer tabs or some other features is maybe you're a developer and you're creating software that runs on top of Windows and you need to know if there are certain features there. They did vaguely say on the call that there would be, so I should go look at my notes to see exactly what they said, but it was, there would be a mechanism for developers who needed to know the exact build number and they could determine features from that. And this ties into my theory about how they're going to handle the way that businesses managed organizations are serviced versus how individuals who are running Windows 11 Home or Pro are going to be serviced going forward. But let's get to that. I'm sorry.
Let's talk about that, actually.
You want to do that right now?
Let's explain. Okay. Yeah, let's explain what that is best we can, because this is very complicated, unfortunately. So,
first of all, I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt. Let's start with the support life cycles first, right? That's the most important thing. So you mentioned this already. The support life cycle clock has started. What does that mean?
So it means starting yesterday, if you're a home user or a pro user, unless you're on a pro managed device, or is it, no, actually it's all home and all pro, I believe, is 24 months of support, and all enterprise and education, 36 months. So it's a lot, it's a long period that this particular version is going to be supported, and it began yesterday. The support clock started ticking yesterday.
Right. So they're serviced differently. So that's one thing.
They are. And this is new, right? The fact that if you're on enterprise or if you're on education, when Microsoft rolls out subsequent new features between these annual feature updates, it's going to be off for you. It's going to be turned off for you, which IT pros are going to love. Except there's one exception. The November update, the October-November update, is going to be turned on automatically because it's considered part of 11.22H2.
Right.
And after that, any other subsequent individual feature updates that may come out, you know, the thing we were joking about, Moments, those will be turned off by default until the next feature update, which will be 23H2.
Right.
And then it will automatically all be turned on again.
You're a person and you're running home or pro, and every month Microsoft releases updates. You'll get those. Every once in a while, we don't know. They wouldn't say. They have no idea.
Right.
They said
how often you'll get these.
But there will be new features. There will be new features as well. And you will get those.
Right.
You'll be able to preview them 1 month, and then you'll just get them the next month, whether you want them or not. This is a side story, but I feel compelled to mention at this point, Microsoft shows no interest whatsoever in popping up something like every other platform on Earth and saying, hey, your PC was just updated. Here's what's new. So, for example, I think in October, November, it'd be nice to say, hey, File Explorer just got better. Here's how. Here's we can go to learn more, you know, like Chrome OS does or iOS or everything.
And Edge does. Like, why can't they do this? Edge does it.
I don't
know.
We asked. They were.
They said no,
this question. They were like, no, we love to put ads in Windows, but we don't like doing that. So, all right. They didn't actually say that. But, all right. So a managed business running running education or enterprise will not get any of these interim updates over the next year. But when presumably 23H2 ships in September, October of next year, those interim updates will be rolled into that release for them. And then there's no stopping it at that point, I guess.
Actually, I think they'll get them, but they'll be turned off by default. And so if your IT manager says, I want you to have this, they can set a group policy to turn them on for you, even if you're in enterprise or education, right? So they'll
be there.
They
could do that, right? They could do that now, too, right? Yeah. So if there's an update in January and some business says, no, we want our users to have this stuff, they can flip the switch and get them. Okay.
Right. Yep.
All right. So here's my theory. Now, we know that this past year, past 6 months, whatever, for the first time, I believe, Microsoft has been shipping two builds to the beta channel every time there's an update. And they're off by like a .100 or something. I don't know the
numbers.
Like today. Exactly. And the way that they've differentiated those two things was that one set of those customers or users got the updates, whatever they were, including feature updates, and the other one didn't. And it was like, we're just testing this. But now that you see what they're doing with business customers, managed business customers, I think you see what they were actually testing. I don't know why they couldn't have said this, by the way, 6 months ago, but my theory is that what they were testing was what we're now seeing, which is, in other words, I'm going to make up numbers here. So we just said that the build number for 22H2 is 22621.521 for most people, okay? So let's pretend that it's something simpler like .600, and a feature update comes out, a little feature update, and they turn it up to 700. And then on the side, there's going to be one that's 800, and that one doesn't have the new features, or however they're doing it. They're going to change the build number somewhat. And I think that's how we're going to go forward. And that's why there's this confusing mess of build numbers, because it doesn't really matter. You know, the it does matter. But the primary part, the major part of the build number should be the same for virtually everybody, right? But the minor parts will be different. And those things could show some indication of whether you're getting these additional features or not, and will be what developers can use to test to see whether those features are available and thus whether they can support them in their applications.
Yeah, I think your theory is dead on. Theory.
Yeah,
I think you are correct.
It's an educated guess, but again, I don't understand why Microsoft doesn't come out and just say this.
Yeah.
You know, it's the type of thing, like I talked to Brad about this with StarDock. They run into this problem because I know some people like, I don't understand what the problem is. What's the big deal? Well, StarDock has customers that use their products and they're on different versions of Windows. And this is actually a serious problem, especially when the products that you write in their case are things that mess with the shell. They need to know what's going on there.
Yeah.
And they need to know what the schedule is. They need to know when things are going to change, how many different versions of things are out there in the world. They have millions of customers. Like, this is not a, this is not Bob and Phil over in a corner store or whatever. This is, you know, they have, no, they literally have millions of customers.
Yeah.
And
I understand.
This is a very basic form of clarity that doesn't hurt anyone to communicate and helps actual customers if they would just communicate it, but they don't.
Yeah.
Okay. That's enough.
Yeah, but I think your theory's right. So yeah, this is new that they're going to be doing like they told us in February they were going to be able to ship features whenever the heck they wanted. Like Panos did a blog back in February and said, we're just going to ship features whenever, right? Like it's sometimes they're going to be through the store. Sometimes they're going to be through Windows Update. Sometimes they're going to be here, there. And now they've confirmed, this is what we're going to do. And this is what we're going to do next year. But we can't tell you how many. We can't tell you when. All we will tell you definitively is there will be a 23H2 and beyond. Every as long as Windows 11 is in market, there's going to be the annual fall feature update that will be cumulative and have all these other mini feature drops in it, right?
I've expressed my dismay with the the uncertainty of this, but honestly, I'm okay with the system for the most part. So, any given version of Windows 11 is in market actively for a year. They could add features to it throughout the year and will. We don't know what the schedule is. Yeah. It kind of doesn't matter, whatever. So there are two or three or one feature drop, whatever they call it. They do need names for these things, by the way, because using the term feature update for a major release.
It doesn't work well.
It's bad.
But moments, okay, Paul. We're calling them moments.
I'm going to struggle with using moments. But anyway, and then you roll that into the next major release.
Yeah.
Absolutely fine. Opt-out for businesses by default. Totally makes sense. Right. That solves one big problem.
Yes, it does.
It's. I wish they were a little clearer about it, but it's honestly, it's fine.
I was glad. Once I heard there was the opt out for businesses and education, I was less against this because if there weren't, that would have been a nightmare, right? Like the lack of predictability would have just been much. But
And if you're,
the fact that they can, it's good. And you know what? Why make the Windows team wait a year to give you new features? Like if something really is ready, like Tabbed File Explorer must have just missed the window for inclusion. Like they must have just missed it, right? And if you're that feature team, you're like, oh, great, now I got to wait a year. But now you don't. Now they can say, no, we'll actually deliver it in a month. And that's awesome, right?
I agree.
So for consumers, I think this will be mostly good. For businesses, I think it'll be good as long as people can turn it off. I just worry a little bit about small, I guess SMBs, small mid-sized businesses are the ones I worry about because I'm like, okay, I hope they have IT admins. And if they don't, they're going to get all these features, like they could get these features turned on by default for themselves.
Well, they will.
Things will
showing up. Not, if the computers are not managed in any way, and it's not just Active Directory or Azure Active Directory, it could be Intune, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Any MDM solution. Most really small businesses, it's just ad hoc PCs.
Yeah.
Those things are going to be updated like they're consumer PCs. So you'll be getting new updates. Yeah. I mean, we don't know yet. Look, there could be a future feature drop. I keep calling it. I don't want to call it a feature update, but whatever, where they change the start menu, right? And yes, I mean, in some ways, those kinds of changes could require some training, but I think the feeling, look, I mean, really small businesses are agile. They're just individuals. They're really just people. I mean, this is what people are going to see.
Yeah.
It's, you know, is this something to know about? Right. But it's hopefully not going to be a big deal. I don't think it's going to be a big deal.
I don't either. I think they're going to be minor enough updates, hopefully, that people won't flip out about them.
We keep talking about this. You know, we get app updates every single day on our phones.
Yeah.
And you really probably don't pay too much attention to it, but you get app updates all the time on your Windows computer right now.
Yeah.
they've expanded, just like on mobile, the types of things they can update. I think we're at the point now where they can update anything, basically, like you said, different mechanisms. It gets tricky. The File Explorer one is a little tricky, honestly, because
it is. Yeah.
It's not just tabs, although tabs adds its own major layer of new functionality, which is kind of interesting. Yep. But they're also changing the navigation pane. And the reason that's interesting is because the navigation pane was whatever it was in version 21H1. They changed it in 22H2, and now they're actually changing it again when you get this tabs update. And that's a lot of change to a very specific UI. I kind of wish that 22H2 had just shipped with tabs and this new navigation change, because that's a weird thing to do to people. So people today or yesterday would start getting this new layout, and then in a month or 2 months, we'll get another new layout. And there's new terminology, too, which is kind of weird. The layout is different.
You know what? We've talked about this a little bit, but not everybody's getting this update right away, right? Like when you check for updates, you may not get it because your hardware may not be deemed ready yet, or there may be some incompatibility that they know about. But maybe that's by design, right? Like they're like, okay, so most people aren't going to get this by November, right? And so it's going to really trickle out more slowly, right? And so by November, everybody will get it. And by then you'll just get the tabs with File Explorer, right?
Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit, because I spent the better part of the afternoon yesterday in my bedroom with 8 to 10 different computers at any time.
Your friends, your PC
running
friends.
Updates, trying. Yeah. Because one of the things I'm actually in kind of a weird position where I review laptops. So I get a lot of these things into my house. This summer has been like some weird bonanza. I think between June 1 and yesterday, I have 13 computers, I think, have come through my house. Wow. Maybe more, something like that. Windows computers, a couple of Chromebooks too, but I'm also writing a book. So a lot of the computers I use all the time, including the one I'm on right now, I had already upgraded to 22H2 because I needed to have the feature, you know, to write the book. But I did have several computers that I could use to see what it looked like. What, first of all, do I get this thing automatically? If I do, what does that look like? If I don't, what does that look like? And if I don't, can I force the update? And what does that look like? So this is my whole afternoon. This is what I did. My wife came home from like the hairdresser or whatever, and she went to the bedroom. She's like, okay. And then she just walked. She's like, whatever. I don't know what's going on here.
Like, it looks happening here, but
Like, I know it's computer something. So here's what this is fascinating to me. I wish I had more data, but I should say too, the thing that skews this is these are all brand new computers. Right. Yeah, so most people are running a computer that's 1 to 5 years old. So your results will vary. And the trick here is something Mary Jo just said, which is whether your computer qualifies for this update. And there's this notion of a blocking hold that will be put on your computer if there's something like a driver that needs to be updated before you can get this thing or whatever it is. Microsoft is supposed to communicate this. But what I found was that most of the computers I tested did not update to 22H2 and offered no verbiage whatsoever in Windows Update to indicate that something was coming. Like, you know, it's like, hey, Windows 11's on the way, right? So that kind of message. I only saw that on one computer yesterday and this morning.
Yeah, I didn't get anything on Surface Laptop 3, which is like three years old. I tried it today and I didn't even get a notification that 22H2 was out. Nothing.
Yeah, so Surface Laptop 3 has got to be what, two, maybe even 3 years old?
3 years old,
now?
I think.
Three years old.
Three.
That's probably the most typical PC in this whole group, unfortunately. But the ones I'm testing are new. They're all new. So. Yeah. Of the ones I was able to test, three of them actually were offered this update and installed it. All of them went to the .521 build number, right? It was a ThinkPad Z16, a ThinkPad X13S, which, fascinatingly, is a Qualcomm-based PC running the latest Qualcomm Snapdragon chipset, and then an Acer Aspire Vero, which is that kind of sustainable line they have. You have to install whatever updates are sitting there waiting for us. You reboot, you might have to reboot two times, whatever it takes. And then they were offered the update. And I was like, oh, that's great. But I had several that were not. And it doesn't matter what those computers are, but most of them had no mention at all that there was anything coming in the way of a new version of Windows 11. Mm-hmm. One computer, an EliteBook Dragonfly, the new version, with a G3 probably, HP, actually has a message that says Windows 11 is coming. Hmm. You're not ready yet, but it's coming. It's the type of thing we've seen in the past. And so I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. And there was a link where you say learn more. And it goes to a page that explains what blocking holds are. And then it says this is what's blocking it from installing it on this computer. And there was nothing there. Like there was no information at all. So on that particular computer, I decided to try using the Windows 11 installation assistant to force the upgrade. And there are different ways you can force upgrades, but I just ran that. It actually ran for a long time. It downloaded updates. It did all this stuff. And then it got to a point where it said, oh, no, no, your computer does not qualify. It knew that there was a blocking hold. It said, no, we're not going to do it. So it just stopped it. Now, I don't think there's anything about Windows 11 22H2 that would screw this computer up, but I'm not going to do this, but I could download the ISO or make a, you know, a setup key or whatever, and it would it would install. There's no doubt about it. Like, but I didn't. I didn't do it. The other one worth mentioning. I'm sorry. Yep.
I was just going to tell you something. I forgot to check this, but you know that release information health page? Have you checked that yet for 22H2? Because there's two things listed already.
I was going to say, I checked it yesterday and it wasn't, 22H2 wasn't even there. So
it's there now. So one is KB5012170 might fail to install and you might get, you know, that 0x800F0922 error.
That's famous.
Good old security. It says under it, security update for secure boot DBX might fail to install. And then the other one has to do with Intel Smart Sound Technology drivers and Windows 11. There's compatibility issues. Those are the only two things listed so far.
Okay. I've never even heard of Intel Smart Sound. I'm not sure what that is. Okay, I'll look at that. That's interesting. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to look at this page again too on the actual computer because, you know, look, it's reasonable on day one that not everything is there, I guess.
Right.
But I do find it odd that it said this link will tell you what's wrong, and then you went there and it didn't.
Said nothing. Right.
Nothing's wrong. Nothing.
Yeah. Nothing's wrong. Absolutely nothing is wrong.
What are you talking about? Nothing's wrong.
I also did a manual install on an HP NV16. That one. Went to build .105 when I was done. And I was like, seriously. I also have a first generation Surface Book, which is a sixth gen Intel chipset, right? Infamously, I remember all the problems. I use this for the book as it was one of three machines that I force updated on unsupported hardware to see what that looked like. So that one I didn't do yesterday, but I went back to look at that because I'm not sure I ever looked at the build number. And the build number on that one is 22621.382. Like, I don't know.
Oh, wow.
I used exactly the same setup media as I used everywhere else. And for some reason on that hardware, it's on .382. And and I don't know what that's all about.
You're making me remember something else we should make sure to mention. Microsoft has not changed the requirements for 22H2 at all for hardware, right? Like, if you have something where the CPU and TPU don't meet the bar, it's still not going to meet the bar now with 22H2. Right. They did not relax it.
Eighth gen Intel or and TPU 2.0 still required. Yeah.
Okay. Still holding. And if you are somebody who is willing to take the risk and install it and not be quote unquote supported by Microsoft, you can still do that with this release too. They didn't take that loophole away.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's still there. And it's still a free update. There's no end in sight to when this is no longer going to be a free update. It's free and you can get it. Whether you're on 10 or 11, it's free.
And we've likened this in the past to the, you know, the product key thing from Windows 7 and 8, where you have a retail product key and it would just activate on Windows 10, still activates on Windows 11, by the way, as well. It's like, well, you know, we're probably going to get rid of that. And it's like, we're probably not really going to get rid of that. I can't find, I did find this. So by the way, remember last year, the big controversy was going to be that the home edition of Windows 11 required a Microsoft account. But that's because they weren't honest about the hardware requirements. The big deal was the TPM 2.0 and the eighth gen or newer Intel and then, you know, whatever on AMD and Qualcomm. Everyone was freaking out. And as I've discussed, I think in the past, and as I've written in the book and I've done multiple times, you can install Windows 11 on unsupported hardware. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of made the argument that, you know, sixth, seventh generation Intel, honestly, with TPM 1.2 or 2.0, usually 2.0, there's no reason this thing can't be as secure as unsupported hardware, right? It just doesn't make sense. But yeah. I'm not going to be able to explain this very well. I'm just going to kind of read part of this. But I believe in 22H2, they've implemented some security features, and they specifically say that this requires an 8th-gen Intel processor or newer, and this might explain the requirements, even though mm-hmm. last year this was not exist. In place.
Right. How does it explain it?
It's a hypervisor-protected code integrity feature that runs kernel mode integrity inside a secure VBS environment instead of the main Windows kernel, helping to prevent attacks that attempt to modify kernel code. I'm getting choked up. I'm so happy about
so excited.
Like drivers.
And well, this makes sense because they really did say it was security related, right?
That's yes, did, but that never had to back it up last year.
Right. When we looked at what they were saying, we're like, well, this applies to 7th gen too. Why the line in the sand? I think we might in 22H2 mm-hmm. be seeing the reason. And one of the things that is true and will become more and more truer over time is that Windows 11 is and will be even more so secure than Windows 10, semi-arbitrarily, because the new advances are going to go just into Windows 11. But mm-hmm. hardware-backed security is a far more powerful solution than just software-based security, right? So mm-hmm. when you have the backing of modern hardware, you can do things that's not possible just with software. So the combination of new computer hardware and chipsets with new versions of Windows is going to make those things more secure in the future. So I think we're seeing that step a little bit in 22H2.
Really interesting. That makes sense.
I think it will. Mm-hmm.
It's also why they won't support it. It's not maybe even that they won't give you updates, but look, we can't promise your security because a key security element requires 8th gen.
Because we've written the software to understand that thing's there.
Yeah.
It's not going to be there on your computer. We're not going to guarantee what's going to happen.
Can't make any guarantees.
That's a theory.
Makes a lot of sense.
I think it does make sense.
Hey, I need to take a little break. We've got lots more to talk about with 22H2. Pages worth. so stay tuned.
It was a long day.
Now I understand what you meant when you said it was a long day. Holy camoly.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, let's pause so that you can, gather your thoughts as I mention something that's going to be very important to you devs out there. I know devs. I love devs. I'm an honorary dev. And I think something kind of is typical of all devs. We are curious people. We like the latest tech, right? We want to explore it. We actually read the documentation because we want to know not only how things work, but why they work. We find out things like, hypervisor protected mode. We look deep into that. And that's why so many engineers turn to New Relic. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by New Relic. New Relic gives you data about what you build, shows what's really happening in your software lifecycle, the whole stack. It's a single place to see data from the whole stack, so you don't have to look into 16 different tools and make those corrections manually. No more silos. I want to see it all in one place. And here's the best part. New Relic pinpoints the issue down to the line of code so you know why the problems are happening and you can fix them quickly. No wonder dev and ops teams from DoorDash and GitHub and Epic Games and more than 14,000 other companies use New Relic to debug and improve their software. When teams come together around data, it lets you triage problems. You're confident in your decisions because you're using data, not opinions. You've got the facts in front of you, which also reduces the time needed to implement, the fix. Use the data platform made for you, made for the curious. Right now, and I love this, you can get access to the whole New Relic platform plus 100 gigabytes of data a month free forever. They know you're going to love it. No credit card required. Sign up newrelic.com/windows, newrelic.com/windows. You got to have this. You really do. newrelic.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. And now, strongly, we return to our conversation. I've completely lost track. Right. Did you talk about upgrading your? Oh, wait a minute. You want to do the build? Oh, wait a minute. How to install man? Holy cow.
We kind of moved around a lot here.
I let you pick the next.
We've been skipping around.
Yes.
Yeah. So we talked about all the upgraded PCs. We talked about some of the, some of the other features coming in October, November, are some updates to the Photos app, which I don't know why that would be tied to a Octa, whatever. There's a new taskbar overflow experience coming. Nearby Share, which is a great feature I don't think a lot of people know about, is getting some improvements. And though this is not tied to this October-November update, the other bit of this is, remember the Android app support in Windows 11 that was such a big deal last June when they announced it. And then it has been in preview only for part of the time that Windows 11 has been in the market and has been underwhelming, to say the least. 50-something apps and games, most of them crap. There is... I'm just gonna look at the number because I say the number in my and it doesn't make sense to my brain. There's at best dozens of apps and games now. There were going to be over 20,000 Android apps and games within weeks, Microsoft says. Yeah. So roughly the same time frame as this October-November update, and its availability will expand to 31 new countries. It's a very short, small number of countries today. I know it's U.S. and maybe one or two others, I think, but it's it's going to, Australia, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, Japan, U.K., et cetera, et cetera. So lots more. I'm having a hard time reconciling, 50-something apps with 20,000. Hopefully not the same level of quality that we've seen so far, but you couldn't find any gems in 50. I mean, what's 20,000?
How many apps are there in the Amazon App Store? That's what I was trying to determine.
It's 50 something. It's 54.
50 something total.
50. Yeah. 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 It's not. Okay. It's not a lot.
And they're mostly games, right? Like the
majority. And they're mostly like second rate. Yeah. Right. Pathetic. Kind of games.
Okay. Okay.
Do I have it on here? No, I don't have it on. No, I don't have it installed. Sorry. Yeah. There's not a lot of interest for sure.
Right.
Washington Post is in there off the top. Kindle, Audible.
Kindle is the good one, right? The one everyone talks about. But Kindle's in there. Yep. Yeah, that's good.
Yep.
Yep.
So. Yeah.
You know what? One other thing we didn't mention that Leo may hear about on the radio show is as of 22H2, in addition to requiring home users to have a Microsoft account and an internet connection, pro users also have to do it now, too, not just home.
Oh, I'll definitely hear about that.
Well, let me give you the impromptu tip to get around this.
Okay, so we'll save that for the tip. But
I'll give it to you right now. It's not my tip. I'll give it to you now. It's easy. It's easy enough. This is in an episode of Hands on Windows. I don't know if it's out yet or not, but there's different ways you can bypass the limitations.
My favorite
restrictions.
Is noathankyou.com.
That's it.
Yeah that's my favorite.
It's not just you. It's easy to remember, and it's the best way. So when it asks you for a Microsoft account, noathankyou.com. I mean, someday this is going to stop.
Yeah, like, I think Microsoft is allowing it because, right?
It's a
dummy Microsoft account, if you'd use that.
Well, someone created it, and what they did was they logged in unsuccessfully so many times the account got frozen. So now you can't use, so now it actually breaks the, they're like, you can't use this. Just, all right, just use a local account and then you
call
Microsoft.
They just give up. They say, okay, fine. If that's what you want.
It's kind of, it's funny how it works. Yeah. So
good.
That's the best way.
What's the shift plus F10 method? Keith 512 likes that.
So that brings up, that's to disable the network requirement. So what that does is it brings up a command line and, window, and you can type in a command that turns off the part of setup that requires it to have an internet connection. I actually don't recommend that because that disables setup from downloading all the updates that occur during setup. And when you get into the desktop, you're missing a bunch of stuff. It's what Rufus uses. It's one of the reasons I don't like using Rufus for this. It's better just to connect to the internet and bypass MSA. And by the way, I mean, 99% of people should not bypass MSA either. But if you want to or have to, that's the best one.
It's one of those privacy things which just bugs people. But honestly, there's a real benefit to having Microsoft, manage this whole thing. You get syncs over when Michael just got a new gaming PC, I said use your Microsoft account when you log in because all of the stuff will come over from your old PC.
Well, to me, it's about OneDrive sync is the big one.
OneDrive?
Because I use OneDrive.
Plus, if you forget your password, there's a recovery process. I'll tell you, I get more calls on the radio show about that than anything else. I forgot my Windows password.
The other thing, this doesn't maybe get discussed enough, but, the Microsoft Store, what used to be called the Windows Store, started off as a kind of an embarrassment. it's gotten a lot better over time. There's still room for improvement, of course, but and it's not everything. So, for example, when I don't remember when. At one point, Terry Myers announced that Adobe Premiere Elements and Photoshop Elements were coming to the store. And Photoshop Elements did come to the store, but Premiere never did. I wish to God it would, because Adobe has really strict licensing or authorization rules or whatever. So if you put it on one or two computers, you're done. And if you forget to, if you like wipe out the PC and forget to sign out of it, you can't sign in again on a new computer. You have to call them and beg them to, you know, flip the switch. I've had to do that multiple times. It's a pain in the butt. Mm-hmm. But if you go through the store, if you buy the thing in the store, you're good to go. You can put it on as many computers as you want. You don't have to worry about signing out of it or signing into it. You're all set. So there's certain apps that I have acquired through the store. And going forward, I will, if I have the choice, if it's something I'm paying for, I will always get it in the store because of those licensing niceties. It's such a, it makes such a huge difference.
Here's an interesting little tidbit. Citibank owns thankyou.com, according to Out of Sync.
Oh, wow.
That's funny.
It makes sense. Somebody would own thankyou.
It does make sense. Yeah. Right.
So maybe we're just all giving our information to Citibank.
It could be an employee of that company. Remember, you can turn any domain or email address, whatever the domain is, into a Microsoft account.
Right.
It doesn't have to be Outlook.com or whatever. Yeah. It could be, you know, you own a domain.
Yeah, you can use any email for that. So actually, that would be, if you were an IT director at a, you know, you had a lot of Windows installs, you could just do that, make up a big account, burn it in, burn it out, and then use your own, you know.
By the way, if this, I keep telling people this, but if this no at thankyou.com thing fails someday, and I think it will, you just sign in with a Microsoft
account. Or make a dummy account.
Just make a dummy account, sign in, create a, when you're in there, create a local account, make it an administrator, sign into that account, and delete the Microsoft account.
I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that, to be honest.
It takes 2 minutes extra, but it does the same.
I think it's more, you know, it's one of those, but I object, you know, to the principle. Yeah. It's on the principle of the matter.
Mm-hmm. And
So that's going to be home and pro now. Wow, interesting.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, technically, I don't know if you had enterprise or education, if you could create a local account. I mean, you're still signing into something. I mean, in that case, you're usually signing into an Azure Active Directory account. But most people are going to be signing into an account. Yep. I mean, that's just an online account, as Microsoft would call it. Okay.
Moving on.
That's right. So we talked about managed businesses not getting post-22H2 interim updates, except for the October one. Hilarious. We didn't talk about...
What is an eco-friendly update?
I know. I hate talking about stuff like this. All right, so... So
I noticed you skipped over it.
Yeah. All right, so Microsoft occasionally will say, hey, we made this big change, and now Windows updates a lot faster than it used to be. And you're like, really? You know, like one of the things that's interesting about this release, and not unique to this release, this is something they had done previously, and I don't remember when this started, but if you actually get prompted to install a new version of Windows from Windows Update, it works differently than every other way that you install Windows. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. Like, it will download the update and install most of it while you're sitting there using Windows, which makes sense because you're using Windows, right? The idea is we don't want your downtime to be that great because Windows actually still takes between an hour, maybe an hour and 20 minutes to install like a new version, despite all the performance improvements. Yep. But the way you get around that is you fake it, right? So you do everything while the person is using the computer, and then you say, hey, we got to reboot. And instead of doing all that stuff it normally does then and when it's offline, it's already all happened. So it just moves some stuff around, and you reboot, and it's actually pretty quick. So it seems like it was quick, but the truth is it was sitting there for an hour while you were using the computer. So that's the performance bit. Although they've reduced the download size, blah blah blah, whatever.
What was so crazy to me about this whole thing? It's not an enablement package, right?
No, it's like,
a full install. Yeah.
Yep.
I was surprised.
Which, by the way, that was another thing we asked, and they wouldn't tell us. Remember?
I know. I said, wait a minute. Like, there aren't that many new features in this. I know there are some, but like the bigger ones are coming. Yeah. And I said, so why wasn't this an enablement package? And they said, we have no comment. Right. And so I have been asking around, and some people think it's because they changed some things in the taskbar that you know, like that actually require it to be a full install. I don't know. Like I saw some people speculating about setup.exe, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what does that have to do with this? And then I also saw people saying it might be because of how they're going to be servicing it. Like some features turned off, some features turned on forward.
Okay. I think you're onto something.
That makes
right
the
there,
most like, sense, right?
So here's my theory. All I have is theories because, again, Microsoft will never come out and speak clearly about any of this stuff. But my guess is, like I said, over the summer, lots of different updates, lots of different version numbers, lots of whatever. Mm-hmm. Not everyone is coming from the same place when they go to this thing.
Sure.
And that's right. A lot of them are going to be Windows 10 users, right? So I think they had to make it a full update, full feature, because of the sheer number of possibilities. Right. If everyone was on Windows 11 version 21H2 build whatever, and we're all on exactly that one thing, this could be an enabling package. There's no doubt about it. Be quick and easy.
Maybe.
That's my theory. I think you alluded to it. Anyway, the eco-friendly thing is nonsense, Leo, and I will not discuss it. No, it's just, you know, it's like when
carbon emissions, blah blah blah. There we go.
Yeah, data center. We're not burping up as much energy when we deliver updates anymore. Plus, by delivering a smaller update, we're impacting the environment less. Nonsense. Can we please have a green leaf we can stick in Windows Update because we're awesome? Thing. I don't know. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
The sentiment is good, but it's like words.
It's
words.
Okay.
Yeah, just words. But the biggest words we haven't talked about, you know.
Yes, the biggest words.
Is the part of the conversation we had with the Microsoft spokespeople about, so what happens after Windows 11 22H2? Like, okay, we already talked about these minor feature updates are going to come. And the main question everyone had is, okay, first, are you going to continue with feature updates in the second half of the year going forward? They said yes. Then somebody came on the call and said, what about Windows 12? Because, of course, somebody's got to ask that question, right? And
sure. I feel comfortable saying that someone was Zach, right?
No, it Zach wasn't. I don't think it was Zach.
I thought it was. I'm pretty sure it was Zach on my call. I thought it was Zach. Okay.
No,
anyway,
but
Zach was the guy
was
but to give him credit.
Zach Bowden. Zach Bowden, Windows Central, said, you know, I think they're on an every 3-year cadence now, and the next major update will be in 2024. Zach never said it would be called Windows 12, but a lot of people jumped to that conclusion. That's going to be Windows 12,
okay,
right?
There you go. Yep.
And so somebody on the call.
If you don't mind, please use the exact quote, if you can.
Okay.
Of what
well,
we were talking,
I'll use the quote that I put in my story.
Priceless.
Somebody said, what about Windows 12? And they said, Aaron Woodman, Vice President of Windows Marketing, said, I have not heard anyone internally saying we are on a 3-year cadence. Our intention is to continue with annual updates to Windows 11. So when I wrote about this, I said, okay, that's nice that he said this, but I don't believe that's exactly true.
Mary Jo, he's never heard anyone talking about that. I mean, it's irrefutable. I mean, how can you disprove that he has never heard anyone
I can't disprove it. I can't disprove it. But there's a lot of, as we know from our years of covering Microsoft, there's a way to answer a question where you're not technically lying, but you're leaving yourself so much wiggle room, right? So he could say, I've never heard anyone say that. Okay, maybe he's never heard anyone say it, but he could have read it in a piece of documentation or somebody else could have said it, but he didn't
hear it. He could have authored the paper that it instructed his underlings that this is what we're doing.
I know. So we...
What's his job title again?
For you. Vice President of Marketing for Windows. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just going to say, I'm speaking for you here. We believe that there is likely a major feature update to Windows coming in 2024. We don't even know if between now and then there will be anything that's considered a major update. We don't know if they'll do enablement packages. We don't know any of that, right? I believe that report from Zach was not just brought out of thin air. He has good sources. I believe somebody inside the Windows org is talking about this.
That's why I highlighted Zach. Zach is a reliable source of information. He has good sources that he, you know, he relies on when he writes things. He did not pull this out of thin air.
No.
So Aaron may not have heard anyone talking about this, but surely this discussion has been taking place.
It was funny when I heard the person ask the question. I'm like, no, don't say Windows 12, because then they can totally deny that, right? Because the branding is the last thing they decide. They may call it 12, they may call it 11.5, they may call it 13, they may call it 14. We don't know, right? Like, right. Don't say that. Say, is there going to be a major release of Windows that is not Windows 11 in 2024? That's the way you pin it down a little more if you're asking the question. But
yeah.
I don't think that we would have gotten much of a different answer. The official answer is we're only dealing with Windows 11 and we have nothing to say about the future. Like that's the answer.
Right. And actually, you've reminded me with regards to how a feature update, and by feature update, I mean the annual second half of the year update, the big H2. One is delivered.
Yep.
I think it was John Cable who said it could vary based on the makeup of the updates, you know, depending on I think he even said volume of updates. So it's possible, for example, at 23H2 could be an enablement package, or
it could be,
you know, something smaller. This one's a big one, so it's going to, no matter how you choose to install it, you're going to need some time.
Microsoft, I can tell you this, Microsoft inside the company, they're getting people to install it because, you know, they want people inside the company to be using it also. And they've been telling them to set aside 90 minutes for the first part of the install and 20 minutes for the second part of the install. I guess that's after the reboot. So they're giving them the worst case scenario, but it is a big install. Like, even though they've reduced the size and their carbon emissions, blah, 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 whatever. Like, it's big, right? It's not a small one.
Right.
I don't know why. There's not a lot in it. It's got to be the plumbing.
Yeah.
It's got to be the plumbing in here that's making this more of a big deal. Right.
There's a complexity to what we talk about this a lot. You know, the Insider program is very complex. There's lots of builds floating around now in different directions, and they're not tied to anything in particular, and we don't know what's going on. I mean, I think that has impacted the product, you know?
Me too.
I think that's what we're seeing. So
we haven't talked about Windows 10. We have to talk about Windows 10.
Oh, what's that? Windows what? No,
because most people who are running Windows are still on Windows 10. They won't tell us how many of those people are running Windows 10 versus 11. But if you are running Windows 10, you will get your 22H2 update next month in October. That's all we know. We don't know what's in it. We don't know if it's an enablement package. We don't know anything. They won't tell us a thing except that it's coming in October.
Interesting.
Yeah, whenever they first revealed that there would be one, which was humorous because they were already testing builds of it, you know, whatever. But I and I think many others went back to whatever PR handler mentioned that this was coming and said, okay, but what's in it? Like, you silly boy. We'll discuss that later. what a silly question. And it's arriving next month and we still have no idea what's...
No.
My guess is it's nothing or next to nothing. If you look at Windows 10 version 21H2 was, the handful of obscure features that impact almost nobody, it's going to be.
So they're not going to strive for feature parity with Windows 11.
No.
Very,
they're driving
very few things,
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
It's because
they want you to have an incentive to go to 11. Yeah. And if they bring everything back to 10, it's like, you can stay on Windows 10 until 2025 and be fully supported by Microsoft. So... You don't have to rush and get off Windows 10.
You know, maybe this security thing, though, is a reason to go to 11, right? We don't know yet.
I'm sure they're going to sell it that way.
The tip today is about one of the big new security features that's available both to individuals and businesses. This stuff feels like kind of an early days kind of a thing. So obviously we have like anti-malware, anti-phishing, anti-virus and whatever else built into Windows. And Microsoft has Defender branded products that kind of enhance that and work across devices and networks and yada, yada, yada. But I think this notion of like on-device, you know, Microsoft Pluton security chipsets and hardware-backed security, I think is still early days. So we're seeing some of it in 22H2. I think future chipsets are going to enhance that even further. I think this just continues. But this is, you know, for people that care about retro computing or whatever, you reach a point where there are going to be versions of Windows that are no longer, like, available to use anywhere, right?
Windows 10 is now retro computing. You heard it here first.
Well, no, but it will be. I mean, like, in other words, you know, I want to, you know, people are going to want to relive this time period, I guess. I don't know why, but.
No, they do it with 95, sure, yeah.
Yeah, they do it, exactly, right. So, you know, people want to play early DOS games or, you know, blah, 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 whatever. I'm curious, like, how the computers of the future are going to be like these weird secure islands. You know, I don't know if, I wonder about backward capabilities. We'll see. We'll see what happens, but. They're a little. We'll get to this in the tip, but it's some. This is like a one-way dead end road. It's kind of. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen right now. We are going to take a little break, and when we come back, new Surfacy. We're very excited. But first, a word from SecureWorks. I know you want to be secure. SecureWorks is a leader in cybersecurity. Building solutions for security experts by security experts. SecureWorks offers superior threat detection and rapid incident response, all while making sure that customers are never locked into a single vendor. That's nice. SecureWorks offers an open, extended detection and response platform. You've probably heard about it. You certainly heard me talking about it. Taegis XDR. And I'll tell you why. In 2022, it's estimated cyber crime will cost the world $7 trillion with a T. By 2025, that figure will probably grow to as much as $10.5 trillion. Last year, ransomware totaled $20 billion in damages. Attacks occurred every 11 seconds. By 2031, ransomware projected to cost $265 billion a year. And every 2 seconds, it's definitely on its way up. So how do you make sure your organization is not the next victim? SecureWorks Taegis XDR. SecureWorks Taegis provides superior detection, identifying over 470 billion security events per day, prioritizing the true positive alerts, eliminating alert noise, allowing organizations to focus on the real threat. See, this is great because you know the trends, what's going on. And Taegis offers unmatched response with automated response actions to eliminate threats before damage is ever done. This is almost futuristic, this idea of monitoring everything and responding immediately. So even if your organization has a limited IT staff and budget, many of us do, or even if you're full, well-funded, fully staffed security operations center, SecureWorks is going to give you customized support. And with SecureWorks Taegis Managed XDR, you can easily leverage SecureWorks experts to investigate and respond to threats on your behalf. So, you know, even if you have a tiny department, you're totally protected. Cut dwell times, decrease operational burden, reduce cost, 24/7, 365 coverage, whether you experience a security event on Christmas Day, or maybe your half your team is out sick, you could trust SecureWorks is there on the job behind you. Many companies are facing a shortage of security talent. I mean, this is a big problem, right? Hiring and retention harder than ever. Again, SecureWorks to the rescue. They customize the approach and coverage level you get to give you what you need whenever you need it. Bottom line, SecureWorks acts as an extension of your security team on day one, alleviating cybersecurity talent gaps. Now, what happens if you've already found an intruder in your system? I've told you this before. Write it down. Put it on a note. Put it by your desk. 1-800-BREACHED. 1-800-BREACHED. That connects you directly with the SecureWorks Emergency Incident Response Team. It's kind of like it's like 911 for security, right? And it's great to know they're there waiting for you to call. They can provide you with immediate assistance 24/7 in responding to and remediating a possible cyber incident or data breach. And you don't even, if you're not a customer, you can still call that number, become a customer, but be a good time to do that. 1-800-BREACHED. At SecureWorks, you can learn more about the way today's threat environment is evolving, the risks it can present to your organization, including case studies, reports from their counter threat unit, and more. These guys are the experts, and they are constantly monitoring on your behalf. Visit SecureWorks.com/twit. You can get a free trial right now of Taegis XDR. That's SecureWorks.com/twit. Please use that address so they know you saw it on Windows Weekly. SecureWorks.com/twit. SecureWorks, defending every corner of cyberspace. These are the guys. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
This just in.
Uh-oh.
Yep.
So we mentioned earlier that there was an updated Photos app coming in that October-November update. I don't know why they didn't announce this as part of the new dev build today, but separately, Microsoft has just revealed that the new Photos app is now available. Well, is now starting to roll out to people in the dev channel, if you're in the Insider program. It's, you know, Microsoft, so not everyone's going to get it, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, what it looks like is sort of what I expected, which is a simplified version of the app that gets rid of the legacy video editor that's built into it because now they have Clipchamp, right? So if you run the Photos app in Windows 11 today, you'll see ads for Clipchamp everywhere. They're just going to get rid of the legacy version. So the legacy video editor, I should say. If you are a fan of this thing for some reason, it will still be available in the store. But this new Photos app will replace the existing Photos app in Windows 11 in a month or two.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Breaking news. You heard it here first.
Exciting.
So excited. Actually, I'm more excited about the fall Surface launch date. We're starting to hear rumors about new Surfaces.
Me too.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So today, the Walking Cat, our friend, posted a link and he said, hey, if you go to Microsoft.com/event, there's a placeholder page for the Surface event. So I don't know if they intentionally dropped this today or did not, but there's a page there. It says save the date. It says watch live to see what's next. It does not say the word Surface anywhere on here. It just says the event starts at 10 a.m. So it looks like it's a virtual event and not an in-person event, although I've asked for confirmation of that, and we have not heard anything. So the timing of this is very interesting. It's the day after Meta Connect, you know, when Meta is going to talk about their new hardware. It's the same start day as the Ignite conference, Microsoft's annual IT Pro event, so it's the same day. There's a lot of rumors. There's been a lot of rumors around what is likely to be announced by the Surface team at this. We've talked about some of them on the show before. We think there's going to be a Surface Laptop 5. We think there's going to be Surface Studio 3, the all-in-one device. Surface Pro 9, the 2-in-1 family, we think will show up with both, interestingly, ARM and Intel under the same brand. So they're bringing together the Surface Pro X line and the Surface Pro line and just calling it Surface Pro 9. There was a rumor at one point there might be a Surface-branded gaming laptop. There was some site that I had never heard of that published what looked like a real spec sheet for that. But nobody I know who covers hardware for Microsoft closely thinks that is real. So I guess we'll see. They said the specs were too low on that sheet. The other big question mark is Volterra, Project Volterra, which is something Microsoft showed and talked about at Build, the big ARM-based desktop PC that they're positioning as a developer workstation, primarily for AI-type functions. There's some rumors that it could actually start shipping and they could talk about it again at this event and just remind people, hey, we're doing a lot of things with ARM. We've got the Surface Pro 9. We've got this Project Volterra thing. You know, Microsoft, they have to respond to what Apple's doing with ARM. They're not 100% ready for this, and neither is Qualcomm, but sounds like they're going to probably make a big show of what they're doing with ARM at this event.
Is this going to be, you think, just another video with Panos Panay in his office running around, or do you think they might make more of an event out of it?
Leo, he's super pumped for this event.
Yeah, I know
why
he is.
You're downplaying it.
I'm trying to decide what we should do. I guess that's, we'll just, do you guys want to, well, you're going to be watching and working, but. We will cover it on Windows Weekly later in the day. But it's
what
Wednesday.
Day of the week is
Wednesday.
This stuff?
It's Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday.
Yeah. This is perfect for us. I'll get up early. I'll come on my jams. Yeah.
This is a disaster.
Okay, I said, is this event in person? And I just got a response from the spokesperson who said, we'll have more to tell you about whether it's in person at a later date.
Well, it better not be too much later. That's only 3 weeks from now.
Yeah, I know. And if it is in person, you've got to give people some heads up, right?
Just circling back, that October 12 event, yeah, that was virtual when we had it last week. I promised I'd get back to you.
Okay. Well, also, it's the first day of Ignite, which is a very busy news day for us, too, because there's always, like, cloud announcements and office announcements and... That's a pretty busy show too.
We will. I think we should live stream it. What even if it's just Panos in his library? Yeah. But
I think so. I do.
7 a.m.
So.
Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern, October 12th, Wednesday. I'll be there. If you guys are not doing anything else, you can be there on our stream. Otherwise,
if
we'll
I'm
talk
alive
about it.
That day, I'm just like with Ignite and that on the same
that's
day.
Be
I'm
crazy. Like, yeah. Probably should just be me, and we'll talk about it following. On Windows Weekly following.
I don't know. Unless they have some big surprise at this Surface event, I feel like it's more an incremental update kind of thing.
Not a new Surface? Not a new hardware?
There's no rumors of a Surface Duo 3 or any brand new form factors. I haven't heard any rumors about either of those.
There is one other rumor that Surface laptop might be Intel only again.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
Not AMD. Yeah. You know, AMD might... I thought, was AMD going to be part of Surface Pro? Maybe not. Never mind. I don't know.
Won't be ARM.
Isn't there just a picture? What's the CEO of AMD? Lisa
Wong.
Sue? Is that her
name? No, Sue. That's right, yeah.
Sue. There was just a picture from Panos's Twitter feed of him and her, like, hugging it up at some event. So if there is no AMD, that's not a good look.
That's right.
Maybe he was hugging her goodbye.
Did she stick a little Ryzen 7 in his pocket.
You didn't they change our sales at all, but thanks.
It didn't look angry. It didn't look like an angry hug.
Interesting. Interesting. I don't know. I would love it an Athlon, or not Athlon, a AMD.
I don't think you'd love an Athlon.
No, I don't want an Athlon laptop, but I would love a new Ryzen laptop. It'd be great.
I want to hear more about Volterra. Like, if they really push us as an AI like first thing again, or if they are more like it's a developer workstation and anybody could have it, right?
So October 12th is also, according to NVIDIA, the release date of their new 4090. Mm-hmm. So, but they wouldn't tie that in. That's too high.
Too many things.
Expensive.
Too many
it's
things.
Like a $1,200 card. Yeah. And then the next day is the 13th gen CPU available. Day.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. So yeah. That might be
the desktop class chips.
Well, yeah. They always do desktop first, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's just a busy time of the month. Google's October 6th. Apple has not yet announced when their event is going to be, but they will.
They got something.
It's probably the 18th. Is maybe my guess. Especially now that we know that there's these two other.
Yeah, they're going to want to make sure not to step all over the Microsoft event. Get lost in the news cycle.
Okay. I know that's not really a concern, but, why not? We'll give Google the
Tim
first
Cook,
week.
Like, the 12th sounds good. Let's do the 12th.
What the hell? Nothing else is happening.
What's that thing they have again? A refrigerator microwave?
Because Apple will announce laptops. This will be M2 laptops, M2 hardware. So,
right. Yep.
What day is that? The Apple one?
It's not announced. They don't tell you till a week ahead of time, but my best guess is the 18th, the following week. This actually kind of confirms my guess. If Microsoft's going to do event on the Wednesday before this, I said the 6th is out. The 4th is out because it's not only early in the month. Google's going to do their event that week. The following week, they could do it on the 11th, but it would really step on Microsoft.
Okay, Columbus Day. Is Columbus Day what's screwing up this week? Is that why this thing is happening?
Yeah, it is. That is
so they won't do it then, because that'd be the day after a holiday. So, yeah, I think the 18th is a pretty sure.
Well, they did the iPhone event the day after Labor Day, didn't they?
Which was kind of weird.
Well,
two days after, they did it on Wednesday as a result. So, yeah, you never know with Apple. If they did do that, if Columbus Day is the 10th, Apple would do it on the 12th.
That would be a massive FU to Microsoft. That would be massive.
I don't think they're going to do that. I really don't.
No, I don't either. I think it would have been weird if Microsoft did their event on the same day as Meta, or if Apple does theirs on the same day as Meta. It's like that. You shouldn't do that.
Apple, you could picture Apple doing it, right? They don't like Meta.
Yes.
There's not a lot of love there.
Good. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll put a pin in the 12th. We'll be doing that.
Wow.
And the 18th, I'm guessing, for Apple, we'll be doing that.
Hmm. Right.
Okay. Yep. What else? What is this with Pentium, Centium, Permium. Centium.
Centium is a good name.
Yeah.
So remember when Pentium was literally the biggest, most powerful processor in the world? This must have been like the mid-90s, I guess. I remember I had a friend who bought one, and they had a they had the floating point bug. Remember? He had to send it back and give him his credit card number.
That was like I think it was 386 or 486?
$900 or something. It was a 586.
586. Okay.
But they wanted to move to brands because numbers couldn't be trademarked and people were stealing their brands, right? So that was actually the end of it. There was no real 686. They went. They bought the that Israeli company went to the core processor architecture after that. But you know that used to be the thing. That was like the biggest thing in the world, and now it is the saddest, stupidest processor brand. That's weird how much has changed in 27 years, whatever that is. So there's also Celeron, right? And I don't remember if was Celeron ever the. It's possible Celeron was a high end brand in the beginning too. I remember it came initially on a card, and required it, and people freaked out because they weren't using sockets, and then they went back. They stopped doing that. Anywho, those two brands are going to be taken away. They're still going to make these low end processors, but now they will simply be called Intel processor.
What?
I know.
Well, at least so you don't have to have a circular slide rule to figure out the name. Holy cow.
Right. I know.
Okay. Intel processor. They're not going to say any EMs anymore.
Yeah. So there you
Wow.
go. Weird.
Weird. Weird with a beard.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. That is kind of the end of an era. I hate to say it, but that.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the end, it's been over for a long time.
Yeah, well, the era ended. It's the end of the
era. The era ended, you know, 20 years ago. But
wow, that's interesting. So if I buy a cheap Chromebook, it won't. It'll just say an Intel. They'll still have gold or U. Well,
no,
or
I don't know. It will be capital P. I'm sure there'll be model numbers. You know, I don't know.
Okay. I think for normals, though, this makes more sense, right?
Oh, yeah.
It would make more sense just to get rid of it.
These names are tarnished forever. Everybody says, I don't want... They kill Adam,
too,
right?
When you hear Celeron, right, you're like, no.
No,
right?
You don't want that. Yeah. I mean, in the day, Celeron is pretty exciting. Gosh, that's more than 20 years old now.
Mm. Yep.
Holy cow. Okay.
I have a hard time remembering Celeron, like what the deal was with Celeron. But I assume it was a high-end brand originally. Had to have been, right? Mm. No, there was Pentium...
No, actually, it wasn't.
Remember, there was Pentium 2, Pentium 3. So Celeron must have been like a mid-level thing.
I think it was a binned Pentium, but I do remember they were highly overclockable. So for a while with enthusiasts, getting a Celeron was desirable because you could overclock
actually,
the heck out of it.
The first Xbox had a Celeron processor, didn't it?
Did it? No, it was...
I think it did.
Didn't they use the Cell? Not the Celeron?
No.
Surface did, right? Didn't Surface, one of the Surfaces, have Celeron? No. They had Pentium Gold, right? They had Pentium Gold.
The Surface Go, yeah. So it was. It's described as a custom Pentium 3, not a Celeron.
Custom Pentium 3.
I could have
sworn we turned off some of the capabilities so that you could get less.
it's custom. I don't know. Anyway.
All right. Time ago. Good. But it is history. It's definitely history.
It is. Yeah.
The end of the line. Let's talk more Microsoft.
You know, you got to have a section title, Leo. It's
just, well, the whole show, by
it's
the
a
way,
grab bag.
I think we haven't given you enough credit for your creativity. Mm-hmm. The whole show is called This is the Big One, Elizabeth.
Right.
And we have come down now to the Mo Microsoft.
Yeah. What I should have done was made the font size smaller and smaller as we got down to the bottom.
According to this list, Microsoft Teams is a major new vulnerability.
Yeah, so this is how, to me, I'm not an expert in security, and I don't follow the security space. So every time there's a security vulnerability that's notable, it's always discovered by someone I've never heard of. So Vector Research discovered this problem in Microsoft Teams. This is the native app, right? So this is the Electron app that runs on Windows, Mac, and Linux, right? Stores authentication tokens in clear text, right? And so if you're able to get physical access to the computer and it's logged in, you can get into Teams. You can then do things through the Teams clients not to the computer, interestingly, but to the Microsoft Graph API, which is like a kind of a, you know, it's just a bunch of steps that probably are never going to happen. So Microsoft has basically said, thank you for telling us. We have no plans to fix this. You know, whatever. Vector Research recommends that if you're using Teams, use the web-based version of Teams, not the native app version, because Microsoft will almost certainly fix this thing eventually. But one of the things we know is that Microsoft is moving the Teams code base to be like web standard, like progressive web app. That platform would have solved this problem. This would not be a security problem in a progressive web app. So it's possible that the solution to this is a coming lightweight version of Teams that is cross-platform.
Good.
And, you know,
because I don't want to install Electron. That's
I know
no fun.
It's I you know well you know if you want your computer's a little too fast, you know, we have a solution to that problem.
Slow it down. Yeah, sure. I know that sounds like a vulnerability, because it sounds like, I mean, if they have to have physical access to your machine, it's not so bad. But if somebody got into your machine over the network because of another vulnerability, they could pose as you on Teams.
Yeah,
which would be I think problematic.
Right. I don't know. I really don't understand this too well, but it's basically what most people have said is if they just moved to PWA, this would go away.
So, well, they could fix it immediately anyway.
Yeah.
Power platform, Mary Jo. I'm so excited.
Yeah. You know what? This week, just because there wasn't enough happening this week, it was also the first annual Microsoft Power Platform Conference. And you know how I had to run off the show last week at the end, and you guys thought I was going to the Queen's funeral?
Yeah.
I was not. I was doing something better. I was interviewing Charles LaManna and Jeff Teeper about the Power Platform. Like, I had to talk to them right then because I really wanted to learn about why they were doing this conference and what they were going to do. And here's my takeaways from this. Number one, this thing called adaptive cards that is an open source framework for embedding bits of UI and applications. This is becoming like a standard thing across Microsoft. Like, Windows used to talk about this, and then we heard the Loop people talk about it. Like, you could build Loop components using adaptive cards. We heard about that this year. And now we found out you also can combine adaptive cards inside of Power Apps and build things using adaptive cards in Power Apps Designer. So I never really paid that much attention to adaptive cards, but it seems like it's the new hot thing at Microsoft for some reason. The other thing they announced was co-authoring inside Power Apps, which is super interesting for people who are building Power Apps, but they're trying to build them with someone else. Before, the way you do this is one of you is in Power Apps building something, and then you have to pass it off to the other person, then back to the other person. Now you can actually do real-time co-authoring and co-presence inside Power Apps.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. Power Apps is becoming a big deal. Like, Jeff Teeper, who is way up in the Office hierarchy at Microsoft, he said Power Apps is the development platform for Office. Like, that's how they're looking at it now. That's pretty much how important it is.
I was going to mention that if you didn't say that. I found that to be an incredible statement.
That's a huge statement, right? Yeah. And he's like, I've been around since we were trying to do VBA and like trying to figure out how do you build something inside Office. He's like, Power Apps is the Power Platform is the way you build things in Office now. That's it. Like, that's our story. And whenever you hear them talk about collaborative apps, all collaborative apps are, it's a very broad definition now, but it means you can put pieces of Office inside of Power Apps. You can put pieces of Power Apps inside Office. You can put Dynamics inside Office. You can put Office and Dynamics. They're making it so these things are bite-sized pieces that you can kind of pull this into here and this into there. They want to make it so they talk about citizen developers and low code and all that, but they really want to make development easier for people who are in the Office and the Dynamics world.
Yeah, that makes sense. They also want to make development a subscription thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I talked about this last week, but VS Code, you need to, everywhere along the Microsoft development spectrum, you really need to be a subscriber.
You do.
And that makes sense. That's how they get this revenue.
Yep. Yeah. It is. So, I unfortunately was not going to England It would have been cool to see the funeral, but instead I got to talk to two people I don't get to talk to very often, so that was really fun.
I'd rather talk to Jeff Taper than the Queen, but yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You didn't want to wait in that 10-hour line?
I did not want to wait in the queue. I'm not good at queuing.
I love it. They call it the queue.
New Yorkers are bad at queuing, I will say.
Somebody pointed out the word queue, and that's what they're calling that 10-hour line to view the Queen, is a word that says everything in the first letter and then has E, U, E, and U queuing up at the end of it.
Yeah, just like everything else in British English. They add extra letters. Exactly.
It is a Q.
The letters are queuing behind the Q.
It's the perfect British word.
Yeah. Yep. It's actually pretty funny.
It is.
Microsoft Learn.
Yeah, so I had a little mini freak out about this, as Mary Jo knows, yesterday. She talked me off the cliff. The reason is, a year ago, Microsoft announced that they were going to roll Channel 9 into Microsoft Learn, right?
Yeah.
And the idea at the time was that all of the incredible content that Channel 9 had created over 20-plus years, I think, 24 years, whatever, was going to be available on Microsoft Learn. And it's not. A lot of it is not there. A lot of it's really hard to find. Channel 9, I think, was a special resource. I was freaked about that. And then I got this news story in my inbox from Microsoft. Hey, we're going to get rid of Microsoft Docs, and we're going to roll it into Learn. And I was like, no.
So Docs, but actually, what is Docs, first of all?
So Microsoft Docs is Microsoft's documentation.
It's all the MSDN, what used to be MSDN stuff.
Right? So if you go to docs.microsoft.com now, it actually goes to learn.microsoft.com. It should go to learn.microsoft.com/docs. But so the documentation stuff is not going to be changed. It will still it's still all there. So it's not going to be.
How about the knowledge base? Is that part of that?
That's a good question. It should be. But actually, those things have unique URLs. So probably, I mean, technically, I guess it probably would be. But this is, Microsoft Learn is more about like training and like how-to guides.
Are they taking over the LinkedIn Learning and making it Microsoft Learn? Or is this a new?
Well, Microsoft Learn actually has already existed.
And those two things are integrated, Learn and LinkedIn Learning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're making one giant place for everything eventually.
It is. Yeah, it's getting bigger. And if you are somebody who's like bookmarked technical content and you're like, oh man, all my bookmarks. No, they're going to preserve your bookmarks. And if you go to that new doc, I like the new documents page. I think it's way easier to see what's there. Like, it's a really page.
When you cover Microsoft, like Mary Jo and I. But you know, Mary Jo, because you do the same thing I do.
Yeah.
Microsoft announces their earnings. You're like, Microsoft.com/investor. Like, you just type stuff. Yeah. And so, like, one of the things I type really quickly, I go to the site all the time, is docs.microsoft.com. So I type DOC, and it auto-completes, I'm there. Yeah. And so it's a small thing. You know, it's learn.microsoft.com/docs. We'll get you to this thing. I agree that
Keep typing docs.microsoft.com, and then you'll just have one extra click.
Fair enough. Well, no, it should push through. Well, I think it only pushes through to learn.microsoft. So you have to go. Manually go to docs.
You have one extra
click. That's something they should fix.
But if you had a bookmark, they said they're preserving it. So
they are. Yeah.
Anyway, it's okay.
Paul, you'll be okay. You're going to be okay.
I don't like change.
No, I know how you feel.
I just don't understand this.
This is really important. Okay. If you're you need a reference that's kind of static and always there.
Right.
This is why
People got very traumatized. But what happened to Channel 9 and MSDN and TechNet? Like, didn't really preserve everything when that came over, so people are just like, "Oh man, this is a nightmare." Right?
Thank you for bringing up that memory. Yeah, that's right. MSDN, what a nightmare that is. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So hopefully they've learned that lesson, and things are going to stick around in Docs.
Developer.microsoft.com.
Not be taken away.
It's not the same. That should be the tagline. It's not the same. Because it's not. Yeah. Anyway, it's okay.
He's going to be okay.
I'm with you, Paul.
I don't like change.
This is why
I
use Lisp, because the documentation hasn't changed since 1984. And it's still there.
Right.
And never going to move.
No, I really hope learn their lesson about this. I do. I really hope they don't uproot this, because people will mutiny. They will.
I think this will be the least problematic of the changes you've discussed here.
I agree. Yeah.
But it's still.
Hopefully. I hope we're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Canva.
Yeah. So earlier in the show.
This is interesting because Figma just got bought by Adobe for the ridiculous sum of $20 billion.
Yeah.
Canva is.
Has not been bought.
It's not been, but they're the competitor, right? They're one
actually, they are. So, yeah, that's what's interesting. So, Canva has been, so for Canva, for those people who don't know what they are, it's kind of a, like a, an, well, it's a set of web apps and services for creating design elements that you might use in social media and YouTube videos, or even in print media, like if you're making posters or things like that. It's so successful, I think. I actually, no one has ever, you know, no one from Adobe would ever say this, but Adobe has something called Creative Cloud Express. It is very clearly in the market because Canva exists.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. So Canva, I've used it. I do use it. It's a nice resource for that kind of stuff. Most people, well, a lot of people don't really need visual elements, but they do create things like documents or notes or presentations or whatever. So Canva is creating something called Visual Work Suite. It's not a separate product. So Canva is free and paid. There's a free version and a paid version. Paid version, obviously, get access to many more assets, et cetera, probably in the case of if you're creating documents now or presentations or whatever, you know, web storage is probably part of it. I'm not actually sure. But they're as part of this, they're going to have a Docs app. And this is the Notion-like thing I was referring to earlier that to me looks a lot like Notion or things that are like Notion, mm-hmm. right? And it's, you know, this is, I have to say, my initial reaction to this, of course, my knee-jerk reaction is always wrong. It was like, this is stupid. What are they doing? And then you read about it and you're like, oh, okay, actually makes sense. So I am a professional writer, but I only use 5-7% of Word, maybe. Most people are not professional writers. They need even less than I use. Most people, whatever their job is, they have some need to write something from time to time. They use whatever they use. But this is kind of a document creation platform for creators. And I meant broadly, right? Because creators are all kinds of different people. They don't just make videos or social media posts or whatever. I mean, people are writers or creators or, you know, whatever. So in the context of what they do, the full list of things they have here now or will soon have are docs, whiteboards, presentations, social media, video, print, and websites. All of which are exactly what they sound like, right? And I, you know, honestly, and the, you know, there's a free version, like I said. The paid version is $120 per year. And it's interesting. So I don't know.
This is why Adobe bought Figma. They were getting their lunch handed to them.
By things like this.
It's hard to do the math. You know, Figma's annual recurring revenue was $400 million. It's a lot of $400 million to get to $20 billion.
Yeah. I almost got into that part of it. I almost said to you when you first mentioned Figma, I said the math on that is, in my head, I didn't say it, but the math on that is fascinating. Here's the real math. What happens when a company like Figma or these guys make your business obsolete?
Exactly.
How much will that
That's
cost?
Why Adobe did it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And now I have to wonder what, you know, what they're going to do about Canva, right?
Or it's just like Adobe is
Or maybe Canva is more of a threat to Zoho or Google Docs or something like that.
Well, eventually, right? I mean, eventually. But the thing is, like, Adobe Creative Cloud, as we call it now, is what I think of as a legacy business that has been turned into a subscription model. What does that sound like? Microsoft 365, mm-hmm. right? It's kind of the creative version of Microsoft 365. Mm-hmm. So these are two businesses that are legacy businesses. They've been kind of propped up for this new world, but they're under fire by things that are free or almost free and are much easier to use. So Notion being the obvious thing compared to, say, OneNote or Word or whatever. You know, Google Docs was a foray into this kind of an idea for, you know, for specific word processing, spreadsheets, presentations,
whatever. Google, though, never stopped being Battleship Gray. So it never got – Canva's pretty. And I could see Canva kind of getting some traction.
Well, and Canva is I would say Google is a little more beholden to the old way of doing things.
Right.
Even though they had modern things like, you know, real-time collaboration, all that. It was very much set up toolbars, menus, you know.
And it looked like an engineer designed it. It really didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, exactly. And then you guys haven't mentioned this, but Microsoft's building its own competitor to Canva, right? That Microsoft Designer thing, right? So they're building a competitor to Notion.
And these collaborative, panels.
Collaborative apps.
If you go back, I don't know the time. I'm sorry, I don't know the exact dates, but Mary Jo remember things like this. Like there were tools like Sway is an obvious one.
Yeah.
And there was some, it was like a front end for PowerPoint. His name escapes me now. These were positioned in the beginning as like, we have these big battleship things that we make, but we have these smaller, lighter, you know, blah, 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 whatever. They both have disappeared, actually, but they're still kind of pushing toward that. I think it's hard when you have something that's like a everything in one product solution like Word or Excel or whatever. But these little guys, like little markdown editors, little note-taking apps, little to-do lists, you know, whatever, I think are eating the lunch of these, like, powerful paid suites.
And Do you know who else announced this this week? Slack.
Oh, right.
Slack has docs, or is going to have docs.
And, this is in the notes, but Zoom announced they're going to have email and calendar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Well, no one knows this, but we've talked about the fact that Amazon has this suite of business apps that do things I know that no one has ever heard of, but Amazon is struggling to get into this as well. I mean, eventually everyone's going to do everything, you know? So we'll see. I mean, this, you know, we'll see what wins out in the end, but I will say I just having used Canva for the stuff that they're kind of traditionally good at. I like the service. It works well. I mean, this is curious. I mean, this is interesting. I'm not saying I'm switching.
Isn't this all a precursor to kind of the web as the operating system? That's kind
of listen, Mark Andreessen. I don't know what nonsense you're spreading.
No, but I mean, honestly, and who's going to be best positioned for that? Is the companies that have the back end, Azure, AWS,
this is
Google.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the same argument about game streaming. Like, who has the infrastructure to .. Yeah,
because I bet you Canva is running on Azure. I mean, or AWS, right?
Yeah. I would. So, So, Microsoft is positioned to do well against these kinds of upstarts. These are the types of businesses they would have destroyed in the 1990s easily. It's a different world today, right? So, we'll see what happens. But if they do the right thing, they will come out with new versions of legacy apps or new apps that they call something else. That, like Microsoft Loop, right? That will be as good or better than Notion and will appeal to their existing cousin, you know, all that stuff. So
I wonder if Figma will start an acquisition frenzy, that there'll be a feeding frenzy now for these guys.
Well,
and maybe that's why Slack's adding docs, right? Slack would love to get acquired. They need to get acquired.
Well,
they're part of Salesforce, right? Didn't they get acquired?
Oh, they did get acquired. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Salesforce. Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but now they're bolstering it. But Salesforce, as the parent company, is saying, look, we can't just do, you know, Microsoft Teams is not just chat. Microsoft Teams is an operating system. They're already getting destroyed just in that one thing.
That's when the end times have come, when you can do a document, a drawing, a whiteboard in Teams. And that's coming, right?
This is going to be the second coming of Emacs.
I've got all of that already in my Emacs.
Wow. I mean, I hope you like text, but seriously, it does everything.
I can do it all.
My favorite is when you go to a geek developer conference and they have their PowerPoint slides in Emacs. I love that. I just love that. It's just so
true geeks. True geeks.
So 1980s. So cool. OneNote is also undergoing some shifts.
So remember last August when we kind of thought we knew where OneNote was going, and then they said, you know what, we're actually going to merge the two different versions of OneNote that we have. And on Windows, it'll just be one OneNote, which we were like, oh, good. That sounds great, because right now you could get one from the store and there's one that ships with the operating system. And they said, no, we're going to merge these two things together. We're going to bring the best of both into one product and keep the OneNote for Windows 10 available for people who really need all the functionality. And then we heard nothing, right? Like nothing at all about that merged app until this week, when it showed up on the Microsoft 365 roadmap as going into preview in October and shipping in October. Like, it's all going to happen really fast, right?
What is this thing going to look like, though? Like, what is this? What is this thing?
Right. You know? So, like, if you go back, Yeah, go back and look at our story, stories from this time frame. And it said, you know, like they're going to have all the features that you want, know and love, right? It's going to have like pen and inking and a new UI and new layout option. And they're going to bring the best of one and the other together. And then the way they're doing this is so complicated, how they're merging it, like how they're, what they're telling people, like if you're using this one, well, you do this. If you're using this one, you do that. But
they have
I'm
a lot
curious
of
to see.
Cooks to satisfy here. That's
they,
the problem.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. OneNote's like their marquee, one of their marquee apps. They can't screw this up. Like they have so many people, especially in education, who care, right?
Yes. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And, oh, so it's very popular.
Oh, in education, it's huge. Okay. Really
but,
huge.
You know, but years ago, we had talked to people at OneNote, and they sort of saw this thing we were just talking about coming, and they were saying, you know, well, what do you think about like a lightweight, stripped down OneNote that's, you know, maybe Markdown based? And I was like, please, to me, you know, OneNote started as this product. I couldn't believe they were making, because it was something I needed, and I guess students would need. And I didn't get why. I'm like, you made something I would use every day, and then it turned into an office product, right? So there's a million and one things going on. It's a busy, big thing, and I don't know. You know, if you look at the notes, actually, you can just look at the notes we have for Windows Weekly and Notion. That's kind of as complex as I need my notes to be.
In fact, this is so referring back to the previous story. This is the risk of taking a simple thing like Canva and blowing it up, which you could argue Microsoft's already done with Microsoft. It makes it almost not usable because there's too much in it.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
OneNote is overkill.
It's too much.
That's why
I think so.
Like people used to always say to me, you should be using OneNote, not Notepad. And I'm like, it's overkill for what I need. There's nothing OneNote has so much functionality, right?
there's always a blocker on anything, right? So why don't I just use OneNote for writing, right? I could just use OneNote, you know? There's one big reason, and it is that it's because I publish to the web, and so do you. So if you take something from Word and you paste it into whatever your CMS is, it works fine. If you do it from OneNote, it does not work fine. Yeah. And so that surface, that whatever that thing is, the format, whatever, you would think it must be the same as Microsoft Word. It is not. And so that means I can't use it. Like it doesn't matter how good it is. And then there are other problems, like just complexity related problems.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, when I look at anything, whether like Notion is Notion's beautiful. The reason this document that we look at every day in the notes is formatted with these exact font sizes and heading styles is I paste this into the thing I post when the show goes live, and it maps exactly to WordPress. It's 100%. I don't have to change a thing. It works just as good as Word, and it's a million times simpler.
Yeah. I've been using Notion for a long time. I really like it. And you don't have a lot of font choices or anything. It's just
I don't need a lot of font choices.
It's not about the fonts.
I'm not making a kidnapping note or whatever.
Right.
Like I'm you know, I honestly when I take notes, I don't use any headings or anything. I mean, this is because I'm going to the web with it, but I mean, even like a lengthy 3,000 word article has heading 2. Some hyperlinks, a couple bolds and italics, and you know, that's it. There's nothing. What do you need?
You need Emacs org mode. I'm telling you. Your life would be so much easier. Yeah. Be interesting to see. Will you guys look at OneNote? Because I remember we suffered. We've been suffering for 10 years using OneNote.
I don't care what they do with it. It doesn't matter. It's not going to be what we need. It doesn't matter.
Well, they haven't said, I don't think they've said co-authoring is going to be fixed, right?
It doesn't matter. Honestly, God, I don't care if it's the best co-authoring on earth. Yeah. It doesn't matter because the app they're going to publish, the app they're going to create, has to satisfy the needs of all those users, half of which love the version from Windows 10, half of which love the classic desktop app, which they briefly stopped updating in 2016, by the way. And it's going to be a hot mess of everything that they've ever done pushed together into one. I don't need it. It doesn't matter.
Have to say that in the news, and there has been some upset about it, Notion says we're going to focus more on enterprise, and we're going to have to add enterprise features and stuff. And I have a feeling Notion is moving more in a OneNote direction. Well, they're already paid.
You know, okay, so I didn't know what you were going to say, but I will say, like, when Instagram says we're going to focus more on video, I get this like lump in my like stomach where I'm
me
like,
too.
Oh God, what? But then you say we're going to focus more on enterprise. I'm like, eh, that's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
There's been some concern in the Notion universe about what that of might course. Mean. But that's, you know, people are normally
that's okay.
always
that. I didn't know what you were going to say. Like, depending on what you said, I was going to be like,
I would hate to do anything that would make you unhappy, Paul.
We're going to, no. I mean, like, we're going to focus on like customers that can pay us. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah.
I think it'd probably be more collaborative stuff. I can't remember. It's been a while since it was a couple of weeks ago. But
obviously, for these notes, collaboration is a big deal. The fact that like Mary Jo and I in 2022 can get into a document and both edit it at the same time and not screw anything up ever, not once.
Amazing.
Is an act of magic that is incredible. But in my day-to-day life for writing and whatever, note-taking, I need even less than this.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I just need an editor. I don't need the management fold, you know, the structure and all that stuff.
You need Notepad.
I don't even need that. I need Notepad. If only there was something like Notepad++. Oh, wait. You know what I mean. I need more than Notepad and less than Word, I guess.
You need Therotpad.
He already wrote that.
Oh. Well, a markdown something, maybe.
I think, unfortunately, writing something like Notion is actually really, really, really hard. Just strikes me because
but if Notion goes full enterprise and it's all paid stuff and all the best features are only for paid customers, et cetera, there are a bunch of alternatives.
Oh, there's a ton of them. Yeah, it's a lot of competition.
You'll be okay if you're on Notion today. Don't worry about this. Yeah. You'll be fine.
Yeah. Notion is as perfect a tool for what you guys are doing as I can imagine. Yeah. Really, I mean, just right. It scratches all the itches.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, nothing's perfect, but this is sometimes better than one.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. I think now would be a good time for Mary Jo to take a nap or feed Sriracha because it's Xbox time. Okay.
Because everything has to happen at the same time, Microsoft today started rolling out the September 2022 update for the Xbox One and Xbox Series X and S. There's not a lot going on in here. I think basically the full library view is the big deal, where you can see all the games you own, plus titles from game subscription services, not just Game Pass, but others, all in one place. Okay, that's cool. The big thing here, though, is if you have an Xbox Elite Series 2 controller, this app will let you change the color of the Xbox button in the middle. That's awesome. So instead of being white, it could be like green, which would be my choice, or different colors. You could have it strobe and do different things. I didn't even know you could do that. So that's kind of cool. So that's coming. Actually, it's coming today. So if you have a supported Xbox, you'll get that. You'll get the party chat noise suppression feature we talked about recently for some reason. I don't remember the context of that. Because it's coming to Windows. That's why. But it's available on the console as of today. Oh, boy. I'm having a weird performance problem in my browser. Please wait.
Better than a weird performance problem in your brain.
Yep, that too. This is actually what my brain is like. It says not responding. There it is. There it is. All right. So, yeah, it's just like a little synapse. My synapses are getting a little wide. Anyway, so Microsoft admitted this week that they made changes to how DRM works on Xbox One and Xbox Series X and S, that they say they did to make more games playable while offline, or presumably in a submarine. So when they were asked about this, they were kind of vague, but they said, well, you know, we want to make sure people have a good experience, etc. Anyone who uses an Xbox console knows that this thing is basically dead weight if you're not connected to the internet. So one of the big arguments about like disc-based games that people still have is, well, at least you can still play the game if you're not online. It's like, that's not always true. But the thing is, why are they doing this now, right? So we live in an era where we've already shifted from disc-based games to digital games, I think, although I've never actually seen data for that. But I would imagine most people are getting games digitally, right? I do. In fact, I stopped buying game discs when the Xbox 360 was still a thing. That's how long ago it was. So for the Xbox One, I never bought any discs. Xbox Series X and S, never. I will never buy a game disc, ever. The games I want to play, you have to be online. You know, okay, whatever. So why would they do that? There's another report that I think is related to this, where Sony is reportedly going to launch a new version of the PlayStation 5 that has a detachable disk drive, right? So the way those things work today is they have the diskless version. Got to be careful with that one. And the one with the disk, right? So Microsoft has the same system. So now the one with the disk will basically be the diskless version, but in the box will be this external drive. Okay. Like, why would you do that? Like, why not just, how is this thing going to be sold? Like, you go to, it's like an Apple Watch. You get like two boxes and you put them in one big box if you get the version with it. It's like kind of unclear. But related to this is something to do with DRM. So it's almost like these console makers are positioning themselves for the future, which is the shift from digital games to game streaming, right? Where fewer and fewer customers are going to need discs. And over time, fewer and fewer customers are probably going to need storage, right? So it's kind of an interesting thing. Like, I actually think, or if, I should say, if you think back to the Xbox 360, there was briefly an HD DVD drive, which is an external drive. It was probably connected, I guess, over USB, if I can remember correctly. And you could not put game discs in it, right? And it had to do with DRM. And the issue, this is something about, you know, they don't want people to be able to put something in a box, copy it, bring it to another Xbox in this case, and use it somewhere else. And I think we're kind of shifting the way that DRM works because fewer and fewer people require media. So Microsoft isn't really saying, but my theory is I think we're setting up Xbox and Sony is on the PlayStation side for the future where things are more digital and more streaming. You know, we're going to kind of get rid of discs eventually. I know people in a freak out about that. Anyway, so we also got the second wave of games for Xbox Game Pass across PC, console, and cloud today. I mean, these games will come out over the rest of the month. The big one here is what? It's called Deathloop. And the other ones, Valheim actually is...
Oh, that's how kind exciting.
Of, kind of a big one on that's Xbox,
That's a big
right?
one. I've heard of that before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
that's actually never Valheim, been available on Xbox. So.
Actually, I apologize.
It that's says PC.
Yeah, it's yeah, it's yeah, PC yeah. Game Pass. Sorry, as I said it, I'm like, wait a minute. Does that actually come on Xbox? Sorry. PC, that's game. PC. That's PC. Of course yeah. it is. Deathloop is.
It
PC.
Is coming to Xbox. By Xbox the way. Developers said
it is. Oh, interesting.
They're porting okay. it, but it's wow. that's a ways off. Yeah,
must be played with a keyboard. And then cloud too. So and anyway, so that's coming. That's all coming. I don't know. I keep closing my tabs and then I have to wait. Because my
do not
that's okay. I'll just move
close
on.
Close your tabs.
There's something wrong on this
Hacker
computer.
Hacker breaks into Rockstar. Yeah. Leaks lots of GTA 6 footage. People are disappointed.
Yeah. they see, you don't
they should be happy. At least it's being worked upon.
I would say that this game right now is at the same level of quality that Halo Infinite was yeah. in August 2020.
Yeah. It's Duke Nukem Forever Part 2.
There you go. That's there you go. And anyway, this hack has been confirmed. Rockstar said, yep, network intrusion, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so. And they were pissed because they said, you're not seeing the game as it's going to be. This is very, very yeah. early footage. And don't get your knots right. in a panty.
yep.
So,
and then concurrent with the new Xbox system update on consoles, there's also a new version of the Xbox app for the PC. Performance improvements, et cetera, et cetera. Ooh. I got a Call of Duty message from Xbox.
That's woohoo!
What a weird coincidence. It came in as a notification.
It heard so you strange. Talking.
Yeah, that is really, that's woo-hoo! Fascinating. And of course, what popped up was something I can't, oh, there it is. It says, thank you for pre-ordering Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Your pre-order includes early access to the open beta, which I'm not going to talk, that's my, we'll get to that later. Okay, so that's coming up. Anyway, the Xbox app for PC, performance improvements, shouldn't be hard. But the big thing is integration with the service How Long to Beat, right? And this is a web service that estimates how long games should take and oh. where you are in the game, et cetera. So that's kind of cool.
That's kind of interesting. Yeah. Not that I want to know that, but.
Well, it's like, it's, you know, some people do. There's all. Yeah.
I hear people all the time saying, oh, this is a 500-hour game or this is a 60-hour game or 10-hour game and that kind of thing. So I understand that.
I'd like to know where I am. You know,
yeah.
like
where do I stand? Game,
if you, yeah.
So. You know, I have something to report. I, mm-hmm. as you know, use Linux to play games. And I have to say Steam, which yes. is now incorporated the Proton compatibility layer for Linux. There, mm-hmm. you know, remember I went out and I because I want to play Stray. I can play almost every game, and this is partly because of the Steam Deck, I think.
Oh, man.
But I can play everything I want beautifully. So right. I was streaming on Twitch with OBS on Linux, running Satisfactory, which is a Windows-only game. It ran great.
When you say with OBS.
OBS Studio is what...
You did mean that. The recording, the software.
Yeah. Okay. And streaming. Yeah.
And
all of this
so
running on a
game,
Linux
recording
box.
Recording it. And, yeah. Right. Okay.
Yeah. On, wow. And, yeah. So, you Linux lovers, I know you're not listening to this show.
Just, why? How did this software not get a wine name?
It's like wine, but it's called Proton. Mm. There are several compatibility layers that make gaming, and it works surprisingly well. And I really give credit to Steam
would be
for that.
The hardest thing to do.
One would think.
Right? Like, you can't run a modern version of Office on Linux for some reason, but you're telling me I can play the most modern game imaginable.
Yeah.
It works great. That's crazy.
I'll try Call of Duty. I'd be curious.
Yeah.
Still, you know, I mean, if you want to do PC gaming, you got to be running Windows, I think. But it's slowly, you know, changing. And I've been very happy with the games I can run now under Steam.
Right.
So just thought I'd mention, throw that into our Xbox segment. Okay, Mary Jo, wake up. We will get on with the show, The Back of the Book, coming up in just a sec. Mary Jo Foley from ZDNet, allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com, and his books are at leanpub.com. And our show today is brought to you by Melissa. Melissa is a leading provider. I'd say the leading provider of global data quality and address management solutions. Lousy data quality can cost organizations an average of $15 million a year. And as time goes by, it costs you more and more. Don't waste your marketing dollars. Make sure you manage your budgets effectively and smart. As the longer poor quality data stays in your system, the more it's costing you. To ensure your business is successful, your customer information needs to be accurate. High-quality data doesn't cost you. It saves you money. There's another side to accurate data. Customer service, nothing more. You've already got a customer on the line. They're unhappy about something. And then you say, you live in Florida, right? And they say, no, I live in Idaho. It just makes things worse. Melissa just partnered with a ID Pal. They've launched something new called Melissa ID for seamless contact verification in real time. You could see how valuable and important that might be for you and your compliance, but also just, you know, making sure you've authenticated your user. Melissa ID is a unique, fully customizable, out-of-the-box SaaS solution using a multi-layered approach. It uses biometrics, face matching, liveness testing, address verification, document checks, all of this for automated identity verification. There are lots of places where you need to do that. This is a great way to do it. Melissa's been doing this for 37 plus years. Address standardization, correction, verification. This new app offers coverage of over 6,000 identification documents across 200 countries and jurisdictions. So if you've got to reduce costs associated with fraud, customer acquisition, operations, fulfillment, if you have compliance requirements, you know, banking acts and so forth, this is a great solution. Melissa ID. Just one of the many things Melissa can do. Protect your data from decay with 2.1 billion clean, validated records. You can ensure compliance in anti-money laundering, politically exposed persons, the Bank Secrecy Act. Score and target customers with detailed demographic and firmographic data appends. Complete customer records. You know, if there's a name missing or address or phone number, email addresses, Melissa can most often add it automatically and correctly. And of course, Melissa treats your data like the gold that it is. They undergo continuous independent security audits to make sure they're SOC 2, HIPAA, and GDPR compliant. Your data is safe with Melissa. They also can eliminate duplicates, declutter your database, which reduces mailing costs, postage. You know, Melissa has identity verification, which reduces risk, keeps customers happy. Geocoding enrichments, which converts addresses into latitude and longitude coordinates. Email verification, which can eliminate, get this, 95% of bad email addresses. Just, they're gone. You can even try Melissa on your iOS or Android device with their Lookups app. Search addresses, verify social security numbers, access detailed property data, and more at your fingertips. So make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Try Melissa's APIs in the developer portal. It's easy to log on, sign up, and start playing in the API sandbox 24/7. In fact, we'll get you started today with 1,000 records cleaned free at melissa.com/twit. Make sure you use that address so they know you saw it here, okay? Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, melissa.com/twit. Put the store that away in your safe box for safekeeping there, because you may say someday, oh, this database is out of control. You need Melissa. Melissa.com/twit. Thank you, Melissa, for supporting Windows Weekly. Now to the back of the book with Paul Thurrott and his tip of the week.
Yeah, so one of the less heralded features of Windows 11 version 22H2, and probably one of its least well-understood features, is something called Smart App Control. So this is a security feature. It's available to individuals. It's available to businesses where it can be managed. And it has a little asterisk to it, which is that if you're running Windows 10 or 11 today and you upgrade to 22H2, you cannot enable this feature. So if you buy a new PC with 22H2 on it, I believe it's going to be enabled by default. I've not gotten one to verify that yet. Or if you do a clean install of Windows 11 version 22H2, meaning you download the ISO, clean install onto a computer, or use PC reset to go back to a new install, you can enable it right up front. And the way you do that is you open Windows Security. I should just look at this. Go into App and Browser Control, and you'll see there's something called Smart App Control. And you click on the Settings button, and it can be on. It can be in an evaluation mode, or it can be off, and it's off by default if you upgraded like I did. The problem is if you upgrade, you can't turn it on. It's grayed out. So I have installed this now on 3 computers that I did a clean install with. And of course, I should say what it is. So what it does is it uses AI to predict whether an app you download or copy to your computer is malicious, or what Microsoft calls untrusted. And if it is found to be untrusted, it will block it from running on your computer, right? So it's basically an AI-based way to predict whether an app is safe or not. So how it does its work is a little hard to explain, but the most basic version of the story is if the app is unsigned and the software can't predict the level of maliciousness in the code, it will be untrusted, like full stop. So to test this, I asked on Twitter if people could give me some ideas for malicious apps I could download on my computers, because who doesn't want to do that for fun over a weekend? And I got some pretty good ones. And so I got some of these will be in the book. We'll do an episode of Hands on Windows, for example. I will do this live. And you can see how this works. If you're familiar with the various security controls in Windows for like anti-phishing or antivirus or anti-malware, et cetera, or there are download controls built into Microsoft Edge, for example, where it will try to block the download like right as you're doing it. Windows has multiple layers of support. This is kind of the last line of support is what I would call it. What's interesting about it is it's a one-way street. So A, it's either on or off, obviously. If you decide to turn this thing off, you're never turning it on again. So once you turn it off, it cannot come back. If your computer is managed, that will be decided by your IT department, by the way. So you're not going to be able to turn this off as an individual if it's managed. If you do turn it on and it finds software that it predicts is malicious or is untrusted, I should say, there is no way to bypass it. So there are some common apps out in the world that are just poorly designed, are not signed, and I have been able to trigger this thing, and there's no way around it. So I'm not 100% sure on this bit of it. I've only experimented with this a little bit, but in at least one case, it actually just removed the file. So it was like one of those things. I copied it over USB, tried to run it. It was like, nope. And then I went back to the desktop and it was gone. It's like, yeah, you're not doing it. So it's kind of we talked early on about theories about the future and hardware-backed security and all that kind of stuff. I think this is part of this. And I think this is part of this move where Windows is evolving over time to use hardware to help prevent security, security problems, but also just to turn security on by default, right? So Windows 11, the first version, they're like, look, we have these hardware requirements. Windows 11 version 22H2, like, look, we have all these security features. We're turning them on. So if you buy a new computer going forward, this thing will be on, and it will prevent you from downloading this kind of software. But if you're just getting it yourself like I am right now, you can turn it on yourself. You just have to do a clean install. So you can try it.
Okay.
And, yeah, so the thing I got from Xbox, which is so exciting, is it says, thank you for pre-ordering the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Actually, that's what it says. Your pre-order includes early access to the open beta, which you can start pre-downloading today. That's hilarious. Let me help you with the English of that. You can start downloading it today. And then when the beta goes live tomorrow, I think it's 1 p.m. ET, if I'm not mistaken, you can start playing the game through, I think, the 24th. So this game is available in open beta on PlayStation Now because PlayStation has that exclusivity. If you're on a PC or an Xbox, you can download it from the wherever you got it now, the open beta. On Xbox, by the way, 35 gigs, so might want to get that pre-download started. And you can enjoy the open beta, which is exactly how I will be spending my weekend. I cannot wait.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Yep.
You think it's going to be good? Modern Warfare was a classic version of Call of Duty, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and actually, Modern Warfare, the remake, the 2019 game, I think,
yeah,
was the last Call of Duty game.
The last good one.
Where I actually played the single-player campaign.
Oh, interesting.
Played it all the way through. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's exciting.
Yep. In Modern Warfare, the original trilogy is probably the high point, I would say, for the series.
Yeah, that's my sense of it. Never having played it, but... No, although, I like the World War II one. I really do. What one's that called?
Yeah, I did originally, and it just, over time, as they kept coming out with more and more of them, it was like, okay, guys, we get it. Did the Germans win this time? Or
The zombies win.
Yeah.
Enterprise pick of the week from Mary Jo Foley.
So this is another pick connected to the first ever Microsoft Power Platform conference. In addition to the features I talked about earlier, they also announced a new skilling program and a certification program for people who want to get into Power Apps, who've been looking for kind of like a guided path how to do it. You know, we keep hearing, oh, it's low code. Anybody can do it. It's so easy. Just do it. You know, saying that and actually doing it are two different things. So they started this program. You can go to aka.ms/powerup. And there's a whole website around this. There's people who've actually gone through the program. It's a three-month curriculum. It's virtual. And then at the end, you get a certification saying that you have completed this coursework and you are able to be a Power Platform developer. You can do, they're telling you how to do things like create intelligent chatbots, how to analyze data, how to build solutions, automate processes. So all the things that you do with the different parts of the Power Platform stack. I got to admit, I'm a little tempted to try this myself because I'm like, okay, I've been intimidated to try doing Power Platform stuff because I really have no computer science background at all. I wouldn't call myself like an Excel jockey or someone who thinks in this way, but reading through this material, I'm like, maybe they could turn even a humble journalist like me into a Power Platform developer. Who knows? Wow. So yeah, check it out. You have to apply. The program's free. You have to apply and be accepted. But once you are, everything's free.
It's actually cool. Better for somebody like you to do this.
It is.
Because if Paul and I were to do this, we'd be saying, well, where's the for loop? I don't understand what this wild...
Yeah, you're too advanced. This is for normal people.
Yeah, you don't have any preconceived notions.
Like, how embarrassing would that be?
Well, that too. But, you know, HyperCard... lot. There have been a lot of attempts to make, Apple has Apple Script and stuff, and it's just it's too English-like. So somebody who's done a lot of coding, it's like, I don't get it. So I think this is a good test. Really, because really, all you need is a logical brain and the ability to solve problems and to reason stuff out. You'd be great at that. I'd be very. So you're going to do the whole thing.
You said you had no formal training. The one thing I would say, Mary Jo, is you know, you like to cook or make beer or
same
you
thing.
Have,
yeah.
That's, you do have that analytical mind. And
yeah.
Yeah. You have done it. You just haven't done it this way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking about it. It's a big time commitment. It's like you have to promise to do like 8 to 10 hours of virtual classwork a week.
Ooh,
wow. But, you know, maybe in the off period after Microsoft stops announcing a million things, we could do something like this.
Yeah.
Right. How's November look?
I know. Right. How's your November and December looking?
The problem is going to be that for you is motivation because unlike somebody who's trying to get a job, you know.
Well, maybe I'll switch careers, you know. Maybe I'll stop being a journalist and I'll become like a paraplegic.
Who uses this? Analysts or office workers?
The whole spectrum, right? Like you've got people, they've got case studies up of people who like, I was an office manager and I'm like, you know what? I want more pay. I want better money. Or people who are like, I was working in this like field and I was not really that interested and I wasn't into it. And I thought if I can do this and make more money, let's see. So they're portraying it as anybody who just wants to do a career switch.
Yeah.
It's like any cert. Been intimidated.
Yeah.
Yeah. And intimidated by the whole like, oh, it's computers, right?
And you don't, I mean, you wouldn't want to learn Python.
I mean, no, you know, there's going to be assembly language, right?
Yeah. No, you don't want to learn Delphi. You know,
I don't. I know. Sorry, Delphi Bible author, but I don't want to learn Delphi.
This makes a lot of sense. And honestly, it would be painful for somebody like Paul to do it because it would be like, why are they doing it this way?
And for me, I'm a clean slate when it comes to this. So
you've done Excel macros or something like that, right?
I never have.
Never, not even that. Oh, you are a clean slate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Oh. Please do this.
Maybe.
Now you're going to find out how ridiculous we are.
Yeah. Programming isn't like rocket science.
I know. People have this like thing like programming, right?
I mean, if you're a rocket scientist, you need to program, but.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No.
I might do it. I might apply and see if I can get in, but not right now because it's too busy.
In basic. Yeah.
This is honestly what it's, I'm going to bet. It's a bit more, it's a bit understanding of business processes.
It is. That's what it's more about.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you, so that's, and that's where I would really suffer because I don't, you know, but business, what's that? But I think, and like maybe I can get Lisa to do it too. It'd be fun if you two did it together. she has that kind of mind. She would be a brilliant programmer.
I don't. I bet she would be great at it.
Mary Jo, I really think you do.
You do?
I really
think logically,
If you ever look at an elevator and go, you know, it shouldn't have gone to that floor first, then you should be a program.
Yeah.
I could do better.
That's the test.
And I am very excited about your developer pick of the week, I must say.
Yeah. So our friend, Mark Rusinovich, the CTO of Azure, made a very controversial tweet this week.
Yes, he did.
He's been catching a lot of hell for it. Speaking of languages, he tweeted, it's time to halt starting any new projects in C or C++ and use Rust.
Agreed.
For those scenarios.
Agreed.
Where non-garbage collected languages are required. For the sake of security and reliability, the industry should declare those languages as deprecated. Well, you can imagine how that went over.
I agree, though. Yeah. He's right. Maybe that's a little strong. But he, you know what? Linux just said we're putting Rust in the kernel.
That's what he said. He tweeted that. He's like, look what Linus just said. They're putting Rust in the kernel of Linux, right? So today he came back and said, by the way, there is an enormous amount of C and C++ that's still being maintained and evolved for decades. And last night, I just happened to code a feature for Handle, adding 85,000 lines of sysinternals, C and C++ to code I've written. You know, like in his free time while he's like doing other things.
Well, he's writing his novels,
exactly.
You know, playing an instrument wow.
Exactly. But he said, I will bias towards Rust for new tools. So if Mark Rusinovich said it, guys, like this is kind of.
I almost responded to this tweet. With the following something like, no, I didn't. I almost did. I was going to write him back and be like, I will use Rust when you port the entire Win32 API to Rust.
That's the problem. He's working at a company that's all C++, right?
Yeah.
Right.
He is.
And C.
They invented C++.
I was being, that's what I just said is ludicrous, but that was the point. Like, just to be stupid about it.
Right.
Wow. I didn't realize Mark had done that. I really have a lot of respect for him. A huge respect for Rust. I think I kickstarted the original Rust programming language book, and I've studied it a little bit. It's not for me in the same way that C++ wasn't for me. But I could see for, you know, there's a lot of prologue and a lot of typing. Yeah. I don't need to do. But if you're doing big projects and you want it to be reliable, it's so clear that all the security flaws, almost all of them, are caused by poor memory management. And it would just be so simple. A strongly typed language would just solve so many problems. But
yeah,
we'll see. I doubt
Mark
he'll
said it, guys.
You promise you have this, you know, 100 million programmers who've learned C++.
Right.
And are damned if they're going to throw it out.
No, come on. No offense to C++. The writing was on the wall in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's always been bad.
It's like mainframes, right? Like, they're never going to go away.
Right.
It's like C and C++ are never going to go away, but they're going to be used for more legacy things, and there's going to be a new programming set of kids in town.
Yeah.
Rust.
And and it really addresses this really big issue of reliability and security.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, this all goes back to an era, you know, these languages go back to an era where you didn't really have to worry about that.
Well, Microsoft was working on this problem when they were doing Midori, the operating system Midori. Their idea was, let's go from the ground up and have a more secure, strongly typed language, blah, 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 all these things. And then they just threw the whole thing out. Like, okay.
The guy who wrote C++. Well,
probably some pushback from people who were too freaked out by it being new and different. Right?
I think the guy who wrote C++ is probably in agreement with Mark. He's famous, Bjarne Storstrup, for saying C makes it easy to shoot yourself in the foot. C++ makes it harder, but when you do, it blows your whole leg off.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Rust really protects you. It's a little, you know, there's, again, as just a hobbyist, I wouldn't want to write in Rust because there's a lot of extra work to make sure everything's...
I don't know anything about Rust, but I would imagine, you know, it's not a managed language like C#. So it gives you the power of C++, but a little bit of protection. It sounds a little bit like Object Pascal, I'm just saying.
It actually is. It's strongly typed like Pascal. It's strongly typed. That's really its chief, harder to make a mistake, I guess, is the point, right?
There you go.
Good for you, Mark. Let's have a beer to celebrate.
Yeah, I think you need a beer after that bold statement by Marcus.
Wow, I didn't know he said that. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah. So tomorrow here in the U.S. is the official start of fall. So it's time to start drinking some fall beers and like officially drinking them. Firestone Walker in California makes a very famous Russian Imperial Stout called Parabola. Excellent. Bourbon barrel aged. Delicious. I found this week one that had maple in it. Maple Parabola.
That's good.
Right? Put some maple syrup in, stir it around in the beer pot, then put it in maple syrup bourbon barrels, age it, and you've got like the perfect meld of dark, fudgy chocolate caramel with maple syrup all together in a beer. 10%. Not light, but not the heaviest beer. Good for fall. Good for your first maple. Starting to drink the heavy beers, but wanting to get into it. Yeah.
Maple's the new pumpkin spice.
Maple's better than pumpkin spice.
We like it now.
Maple's my preferred simple syrup if you're making a cocktail, especially now.
Yeah.
Do you use maple syrup, plain old maple syrup? Or
no, it's a maple simple syrup. So it's
sugar,
it's
kind of
half
water,
maple, half water. And then it's maple syrup and water. Yeah.
Nice. So it's a little milder than putting maple syrup in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nice. Maple Parabola from Firestone Walker, a Russian Imperial Stout. I should just have stout for lunch from now on.
It's as many calories probably as your lunch.
Maybe not during the week. I don't know.
But, you know, you'd sure feel good for the rest of the day.
Yeah, you would. You would, especially a big mug of it. Yeah, you'd
mug
be
of stout.
All set for the day.
I think what you're referring to is you'd be asleep and would be having good
meals. Okay, next Wednesday, I'm going to try it. I'm going to get a six-pack
of
maple parabola. Keep it in the fridge. I'll have one every Wednesday
maple
for lunch.
Paralysis.
Maple paralysis.
All right, kids. We've done it again. concluded this thrilling, gripping edition of Windows Weekly. What fun. It's fun when Paul isn't too unhappy, when he's like, he's got something new to play with, something exciting. Right. That's fun. I like that.
Nothing, I had a busy day yesterday.
You had no Thurants today. It was Thurant free.
I have issues with this release of Windows, but I wanted to focus on the nuts and bolts.
The good, not the bad and the ugly.
Not so much the good, but just the what people need to know.
That's nice.
Yeah, that's good.
You don't need to know that I'm insane. You know that.
Thurat is at Thurat.com, Thurroodgood.com. His books are at leanpub.com, The Field Guide to Windows 10. The Windows 11 Field Guide on its way.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
I work on this every day. I know it sounds like it's never happening.
No, he does.
It's over 225 pages long. It will happen.
He does.
Ugh. It's only a small little part of it, too.
Just a little bitty part. Mary Jo Foley, she's at allaboutmicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog. And we really, between the two of them, I don't think there's anything that happens in the world of Windows that that they don't know. Not a tree falls in the Microsoft forest that they aren't underneath it, catching it, ready to feed it back to us. So please come back here. We do the show every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. It means you can tune in at live.twit.tv at that time and see us. If you're watching live, you can chat with us live at irc.twit.tv. If you're watching live, you'll also get all the commercials. Maybe you're thinking, do I need all those commercials? And maybe I'm saying, no, you don't. For ad-free versions of all of the shows, including this one, it's not ad-free live. We haven't figured out a way how to do that yet. I guess we could stop, play music for a couple of minutes and come back. But that's not really a good solution. So you'd have to listen to it as a download. But you can join Club Twit. And I tell you, this is a heck of a deal. So it's $7 a month, a couple of lattes a month, one hot buttered croissant a month, a six-pack of maple parabola. No, not even that. Probably one can of maple parabola a month. And what do you get? You get ad-free versions of everything, every show that's on the playlist here. Windows Weekly, Mac Break Weekly, This Week in Google, This Week in Tech, all of those. You also get some special stuff that isn't available on the regular downloads. You get, for instance, Mr. Thurat here does Hands-On Windows. Great show. I think that's kind of a must if you listen to Windows Weekly. Micah Sargent's Hands on Mac. We have the Untitled Linux Show with Jonathan Bennett. Stacey Higginbotham's Book Club. The GizFizz with Dick Bartolo. It's where we launch new shows. This Week in Space came out of the club because the club subsidized it. You also get access to the Discord, which is really a great community of fun people. It's a great chat environment. And it's not just about the shows. I mean, we talk about everything, sci-fi, software. I'm very active in the coding section. We have a Let's Play section where I've done some gaming. We have a Minecraft server and a whole bunch of stuff. A lot of benefits there. We're trying to do more all the time. Ant Pruitt's our community manager there. He really makes it fun. And then, of course, there's the Twit Plus feed, which gives you all the stuff that happens before and after shows that we don't put in the podcasts. $7 a month and you get all that. If you listen to these shows regularly, you really should be a member. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit. It also really helps us going forward because winter is coming, if you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean.
You know what I mean? It's definitely a big deal. So, please, that's my pitch. twit.tv/clubtwit. We have on-demand shows after the fact for free, as always, ad-supported at the website, twit.tv/ww. You can subscribe in your podcast player. There's a YouTube channel as well. So lots of ways to get the show for free. We always want to make sure that's the case as well. But if you want Paul's show, I should mention at the same site, you can also, I just want Hands-On Windows, just want to hear that. That's $2.99 a month. So you can just do that, but that's just the one show. Again, twit.tv/clubtwit. Thank you, everybody. Really great show. Very excited to go home and try 1122H2 on all my PCs.
Good
what
luck.
Could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? Have a great week. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Don't miss All About Android every week. We talk about the latest news, hardware, apps, and now all the developer-y goodness happening in the Android ecosystem. I'm Jason Howell, also joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our newest co-host on the panel, Wen Tu Dao, who brings her developer chops. Really great stuff. We also invite people from all over the Android ecosystem to talk about this mobile platform we love so much. Join us every Tuesday, All About Android on twit.tv.